Testing.
Stephanie will be the only commissioner.
And I think, is Aaron coming?
He's coming.
Chair Davidson for Elijah.
Good evening. Want to apologize for the delay. We had a couple of commissioners coming in. Good evening. My name is John Davidson. I serve as the chair of the Planning Commission. Today we have a full house except for Commissioner Walter, who's traveling on business. Do we have a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Do we have a second?
Mm-hmm.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
The motion passes. So moving on to the first item, which is City Council Communications. I believe our mayor is going to be a little delayed, so we'll keep moving on. Do we have any community council? All right. Any boards or commissions presenting to us today? Right, we'll keep moving. I'll give it to you, Mr. Cullen, for the staff updates then.
Okay. The only update I want to give you is that there will be another meeting, and that's next week, and on downtown livability on May the 3rd. I will be out of town, so I will not be here to be your staff liaison, but Mike Waterman will be here in my place. So that's just an FYI. That's all I wanted to share with you tonight.
Well, thank you. So we move on to public comment. I think we have the sign-in sheet, so let's take a...
Did you want to go over the channel order of business?
I will.
Sorry.
Okay.
Now I got another one.
I don't like snakes.
And that is because they ran out of space on the wall.
So we have two of those.
Yeah. So
the full house.
That one's probably the soil's drying off of the first oil.
So I think we have a number of folks signed in for public comment this evening. Just a couple of housekeeping rules just to make sure we make progress. We're going to have a single individual comment for 3 minutes rather than 5 minutes, so we can make sure folks have a chance to say what you want to say. If you do have a group of people, for the entire group, we'll have 5 minutes. So again, the goal is to maximize the number of folks who can have their words. We'll start off with the Bellevue Tech Center public comment.
That goes with the yellow.
This one.
Is considered.
Did you mention what they were about?
Yep. So we'll begin with the Bellevue Tech Center public comment. So I think there's about 5 or 6 sheets. So I would ask that if you would please tell us the core of what you want to say and make sure we give a chance to our other colleagues here to also have their comments. So we'll start off with... Peggy Smith.
John, tell them they all have to state their name and their address for the record.
Thank you.
Just a reminder, before you speak, if you would give us your name and address as well, please.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. Peggy Smith. And address.
Up there,
ma'am. Come right here.
Yeah.
Oh, sit down.
Yep. Sit down in front of the mic.
Sorry, I wasn't here for that.
Oh, you're doing fine.
Introduction.
Just state your name and address for the record, please.
This is Peggy Smith, and my address is 15889. North Up Way in Bellevue. And I wanted to speak to the amendments to the initial plans that we had discussed last time we had a meeting about this. I just feel like I think that this is going to be a plan that's going to be approved whether our voices are heard or not. I think maybe you can say that our voices are heard and that you feel our pain and you know what traffic congestion is like and you know what the loss of habitat is like and you know what, how much it hurts to knock down trees. But I'm speaking to the amendment to, you know, change the existing plan on the construction in Bellevue Technical Center, because I live there and I have to travel those streets and I have to try to get on those streets, and it's impossible now. And all of the construction projects have not been completed yet, so we have thousands of people that are still not living in that corridor, and it's difficult to come home from work at night or try to leave to get to work in the morning now. And I think the thing that is most upsetting to me is thinking that they're going to tear down more trees than we've seen torn down in the last few years to build more dwellings that I don't think need to be built, not there, if anywhere else, but not there. We've lost too much green space in Bellevue. And you'd have to tell people where to find a park. You have to tell them how many blocks to go, and it's just hard to find a park. So I think it's valuable. We've got a large pedestrian population there, and I think it's just a really important green space that we have. So that's my two cents.
Thank you very much.
Next up, we have Susan Travis.
I really wasn't planning to speak. I am Susan Travis. I live in the Tam O'Shanter neighborhood, so I travel along Northrop and 24th, 156.
Could you please state your address for the record?
Sure. My address is 18430 Northeast 15th Place, Bellevue.
Thank you.
Like I said, it is the Tam O'Shanter development that I live in. And it has a 9-hole golf course, and it's overlooking Lake Sammamish. It's really quite a suburb. It's beautiful. So the big problem I see is that as I come up 156 and cross over to Northrop, or come Northrop to get on to get to Tam O'Shanter, is that the traffic is a big issue. And one of the delights, actually, when I bought 5 years ago, was to see the greenery, you know, all of the trees that were in the technology center. And when I heard about how many of those trees were going to be taken down and a big development going in, I thought, this is really disturbing. So actually, I went in our neighborhood and asked people to become sign and saying they wanted to be a record of protesting this, and most of them did. And what I learned too, since I'm new to the area, is that this is something that was already decided a long time ago, that it was going to remain a green area and just have the buildings that it has. So since that's happened a couple months ago, that I started getting involved, you know, the new apartment buildings going up on Northrop in 156, and I'm not even sure how many units there are, but it's 4 stories high. There's a new apartment building right on 24th and 156 where Trader Joe's is. It's 4 stories high. Down near QFC at Crossroads is a brand new development going in there. So I just don't know. Are you taking care of the traffic problems, how congested it's going to be? It's already a problem with Microsoft, and now we're going to add all of these other buildings. So I'm here just to say we're concerned about it, and we don't really want to see another high-rise go in the suburban areas.
Thank you, ma'am.
Yeah.
Just a quick reminder, if you signed up but you did not wish to speak, that's fine, too. You can obviously skip the... next up, we have Gail Tony. And please bear with me if I mispronounce or butcher your last name. My apologies in advance.
Good evening. My name is Gail Tony. I live at 1910 160th Avenue Northeast in Bellevue. My property is in the Park Place subdivision that faces directly towards the, we are adjacent to the Bellevue Technology Center. My house looks onto the vegetation that is on the center. We bought our properties with this in mind. This would, all of us came to Bellevue for a reason. It was the livability. But day by day, we see the livability of our city decreasing with the traffic, the congestion, the unaffordable housing prices, everything that's compiling together. We are having more and more struggles. I have 2 children that attend Sherwood Forest Elementary School, which is about a mile from my home. getting to the school can take 10, 15 minutes, and it's very dangerous. I have to turn left going east on Northway to get to the school. I watch, sometimes I've counted over 50 cars passing before I can turn out onto the street. I watch children, high school children, going to Interlake High School. There's a cutoff path in our neighborhood to go into Interlake. I watch children passing or trying to cross Northup Way and on the other side on Northeast 24th, many times almost getting hit. It's very, very dangerous on these streets. Adding more traffic coming into that area is going to just create additional dangers for our children, our citizens. We need spaces in this city. Once you develop, there's no going back. There's no changing, you know. Once you tear up trees and open spaces, it's forever. There's no going back. And we've already lost so much of the tree canopy in the city. The city slogan is a city within a park. That's not true anymore. We're a city that's becoming a concrete jungle, just like downtown Seattle and other major metropolises. We are no longer that city in a park. We have no parks in our area. There are, within the area of the BTC, there's this very, very small park called Ivanhoe Park down Northup Way, and that's basically it besides the Crossroad Park, which is totally congested. You can barely beat your way in there on a weekend. There are, with all of the new developments going in on 156, there's no place for these people to go to take their children. There's no places to walk safely. They talk about mitigating traffic issues. There's no mitigation. There's no way to add additional lanes onto those roads. Families like myself, I can't take my children in their huge softball bags on a light rail or on a city bus. Buses and light rail don't go to the places we need to go to the schools, to the parks, or, you know, to the softball fields, to the grocery store. We need some relief. And we need some future planning that makes sense for this community, or else we're going to be losing more and more residents because it's not livable anymore. And so I beg you to think this issue very carefully through and think about your responsibility as the Planning Commission, what your responsibility is for the future of our city.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Next, it's Joseph King.
Good evening. I'm Joseph King. I live at 15789 Northup Way in Bellevue. And I think we've already addressed the issues about the green space disappearing in Bellevue, so I won't dwell on that. I will dwell on the traffic because I seem to getting worse and worse every day. My house faces right on Bellevue Way. Northup Way, and I see the backups in the morning and the evening as people are trying to get east and west, depending on the flow of traffic, and it is just impossible to get out of there. Fortunately for my condominium complex, we have a turn lane, which I hear is going to be extended down to 164. Well, the other people like at 160th and then Englebrook, they don't. And so right now they have a major problem. One of the issues I have is that the proposed change to the plan is going to try to lift the restrictions that they currently have with the PUD about the Bellevue Tech Center, and that will give them pretty much carte blanche to do much anything, everything they want to do, put in new office buildings with parking garages, which could be anywhere from 1,000 to 1,600 people, I've been told. Add some other residences somewhere on the property, again, encroaching on the green space. But then that adds also a lot of people driving to and from the tech center. In addition to that, I've been told that the LIV condominiums that are across the street on the west side of 156 only have about 20% occupancy. So when they're fully occupied, you'd expect more traffic from that. In addition, as was already noted on the corner of Northup and 156, they got another one that's right now four stories. Don't know how tall that's going to go. and then all the residents in there are going to be adding to the traffic problems. And one additional thing I have is that the transit center, which is due to come online in 2018, people are not going to want to drive into Seattle. They want to come to some place that's a little bit more convenient than Seattle, unload their cars wherever it may be, whether it's on Microsoft's campus or one of the parking areas or even on private streets where we live and have our homes, and then walk the 10 minutes to the transit center. And this traffic congestion is just going to be exasperated more and more. And right now, with timing of the lights and everything, it can take you as much as 40 minutes to get from the center of the Microsoft campus to Northrop and 156 in the afternoon. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Edward McDonald, up next.
Good evening. I'm Edward McDonald, 15936 Northeast 27th Place. I've lived in my home in Sherwood Forest for 32 years, raised my family there, and retired there. I participated in the land use planning regarding the Unigard site, now called Bellevue Technology Center, since I've been here. The latest BTC owners are again asking to amend the Crossroads Subarea Comprehensive Plan. But what they really want to do is they want to eliminate the PUD and the concomitant agreement. The plans that they've shown the community triple the square footage from about 300,000 square foot to about 900,000 square feet. And in addition to that, they're planning 6 high-rise parking garages. The Planning Commission denied their last request in a 5-1 vote on July of 2014. After that, they came back and they tried a zoning request, and that didn't work out for them, so they're back here the third time. The BTC property owners will speak about all of the changes in the area and obsolete land use codes. And if you look west from 156th to the Bellevue subarea or to Redmond, they're correct. But if you look east across 156th, they're wrong. There really has been no substantial development east of 156th. The area has had, and this point about there's no change east of 156th was made by the planning department the last time they made a comprehensive plan amendment request in July of 2014. 156th needs to be a clear dividing line to protect our residential community. The PUD was developed with our community, the property owners, and the city of Bellevue after hundreds of hours of work. The PUD is a contemporary document, not a relic of the past. It represents an agreement that defines the full use of the property. Our community made concessions and agreed to the PUD with the understanding that it was a permanent commitment. The old farm that was there would have been developed as residential homes if not for the Unigard PUD. And I'm a businessman, and I've said before, in business, a deal's a deal. Please do not vacate the PUD. The Unigard PUD was intended to serve as a buffer east of 156th, protecting the trees, the open space, and our residential community. Today, that buffer is needed now more than ever.
Thank you, sir. If I could make a request, we would ask you to wave your hands or some other mechanism to show your appreciation. We want to minimize the actual clapping of hands if we can.
Just tell me about the lights.
Yes, okay, good point. Thank you. Yeah. Just a reminder, yeah, there is a little lamp over there, so just to give you a sense of where you are in terms of timing, if you don't want me to interrupt you. So next up, we have, I believe it's Mr. Kurt Hoveler. H-O-W-E-L-E-R, last name. All right, we'll keep moving on.
I'm going to pass on that.
All right, very good. Ms. Karen Strelo.
Which Karen?
Its last name is, I believe it's Strelo, S-T-R-E-H-L-O-W. Did I get it right?
Yes.
Close
Karen
enough.
Strelo.
Thank you.
I live at 1702 159th Avenue Northeast. And it's in Inglebrook Condominiums. I've lived there for 22 years. One of the reasons that drew me to that condominium, and I actually had a lawyer look at all the specs before I bought the place, was that the wooded area at the Bellevue Tech Center was classified as a green space, so I assumed that it would always be there. Now they want to rip it out and build more buildings. I'm aware that they want more buildings in their facility, but it seems to me that they could work with the community a little bit better. They have a huge flat area that has no trees, that they could certainly develop that area and build some of their buildings without tearing out some of the forested area. I did walk through their parking area. It is beautifully landscaped with their trees. So I think if they were to just revise their plans a little bit, maybe the whole community could work a little bit better. Traffic is a huge problem, and in the last year there have been a lot more accidents on 156th and Northup Way than in the 22 years before that. So there's going to be more and more accidents and issues with traffic.
Thank you. Next I have, I believe it's the Mr. John Zeitz. If I get your last name.
John Zeitz, my address is 18430 Northeast 15th Place, Bellevue. I wanted to say this is the first time in my adult life that I've come to a planning commission out of concern about what is being decided. I'm originally from San Francisco. I lived there 40 years. I came here in March of 2014. In San Francisco, I lived with very few parks and houses crowded very together all over the city. Traffic problems, street problems. When I came here to visit, I was enamored with the beauty of the area. The trees, the environment, I was very attracted to it, and I decided that I wanted to live here and continue living here for the rest of my life, for my retirement. I'm not sure of all the politics that are involved. It concerns me, and I wonder about whether the city is too focused on increasing tax revenue with new buildings that will provide tax revenue for the city, and less concerned with old agreements with former residents that live here and the environment. I'm also working part-time, and I use the streets that have been mentioned several times tonight. I wait in line a long time. I leave early in the morning, come home late at night, and still traffic is bad. I'm here tonight to hope that the Planning Commission will stay with their original zoning decision years ago and maintain the beauty of this area as what I see every day is more and more concrete, more and more apartments built, and in the area of 156 Northrop has a huge eyesore every day when I go to work. It's not completed yet, but it's several blocks of just apartments, and I'm worried that this is going to be extended to this new addition in the Bellevue Technology Center. Thanks for letting me speak.
Thank you. I think it's Barbara Adams, if I get the last name. Avenue Northeast. No? All right, we'll just keep moving on. We have Mr. Reggie John.
Reggie, are you going to be speaking for a group or for yourself?
For the community club.
Okay, I'll give you 5 minutes.
I don't need 5 minutes, but that's fine. Thank you. My name is Reggie John. My address is 15803 Northeast 27th Place, Bellevue. I am the current president of the Sherwood Forest Community Club. Commissioners, the Sherwood Forest neighborhood has submitted statements and many personal emails regarding our concerns with and our strong opposition to the comprehensive plan amendment proposal by the owners of BTC. We expect these letters and emails to be part of the public comment record. I would like to thank all the Sherwood Forest, Foxborough, Bellwood East, Tam O'Shanter, Bridal Trails, Crossroads, and other concerned citizens who have taken the time out of a busy evening to be here yet again regarding BTC. These are just some of the Northeast Bellevue residents who are very aware that it is important to continue to uphold the planned unit development agreement adopted by Bellevue City Council for the BTC property. This existing PUD agreement limits commercial building development on the site. That limit was adopted to assure an appropriate transition zone from the Overlake Village commercial area to the residential neighborhoods east of 156th. This limit of 325,000 square feet of office space has been reached. No further development potential exists for the property. The proposed amendment would eventually allow additional commercial development off the BTC site, which would erode the transition zone, create additional traffic, noise, electrical towers, and loss of tree cover and open space, which will adversely affect the quality of life in the surrounding neighborhoods. The intent of the PUD is as valid today as it was when it was initially adopted in 1972 by the Bellevue City Council. Even more so now, considering the increase in traffic and noise west of 156th. We therefore urge the Planning Commission and the City Council to not allow the amendment to proceed any further. The statement that I just gave is almost word for word the same statement John Harrell gave in July of 2014 as Vice President of the Sherwood Forest Community Club. At that time, the owners of BTC had submitted a proposal to change the Crossroads sub-area plan. Here we are again. What has changed since then? What has not changed is the effectiveness of the PUD that has been in place all these years and the opposition of residents to any changes that will ultimately affect the PUD. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's a copy. Thank you.
Mr. Jack McCullough, please.
No. Sorry. A little confusion there.
That's right.
Wrong client.
Yes. Indeed. Ian will be helping me just moving the...
So, gentlemen, as a group, you will have 5 minutes this evening.
Just three will be, I think, through.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, we'll keep this quick. Jack McCullough, 701 Fifth Avenue, Suite 6600, Seattle 98104. members of the commission. I suspect that this evening I will be the solitary voice in front of you in support of the application of the owners of Bellevue Technology Center. We were here 3 years ago, and you know, we will have an opportunity June 14th to, you know, make a fuller presentation, and you'll hear from more of us and more supporters at that time. But I just wanted to give you a little background so that you were familiar. We were here 3 years ago. At that time, we had a completely different application. It was not specific as to a plan, but it was we were asking the commission to sort of open the door to allow us to consider what the possibilities might be on that site. And the commission's response really was, you know, this was not really the format in which to do it. You should attempt the rezone. Staff agreed at the time that a rezone would be the appropriate avenue. So for the last 3 years, indeed, we pursued the rezone. And then it was determined during the winter that, well, actually, maybe the rezone wasn't the appropriate avenue, given some other information that's come up. So we're back in front of you. But we're back in front of you with the benefit of 3 years of hard work on this. So four voluntary outreach missions that we've had at the center with the neighborhoods. We've got a number of community groups that regional groups that are supporting us, you'll hear about, and significant change conditions. But I want to emphasize, without going into detail tonight, that what we've done in 3 years is we've been able, and we will bring to you a plan that is modest in scope. It does not involve high-rise buildings. It does not involve taking all the trees down. It actually is going to preserve forever the meadow in the northwest corner with the help of Forterra, who we've brought into this through a conservation easement. It is potentially going to introduce some senior housing, small-scale senior housing, into the site. We have presently only a handful of buildings, really seven buildings on the site, and we're looking at maybe adding perhaps four more. We've tried to scale this thing so that we're able to preserve trees, we're able to preserve the meadow, and we're able to do it at a scale that doesn't overpower the site, but provides the opportunity for some development. So, for example, the community, the city, since 14, has adopted its economic development plan, and as we'll talk on June 14th, it focuses on information technology and business service headquarters, which are exactly what's going on here on this site. So Mod Pizza has its world headquarters in this property and has been growing gangbusters on this site and wants additional room to expand. This is a homegrown corporate headquarters that we're trying to accommodate here. And we have a list, I'm not going to go through them, of additional companies, many of whom are technology serving that work with Microsoft and other technology companies in the area. Go ahead. The B line has also been introduced. This is high capacity transit, and it stops immediately across the street from the site. It's a factor that should be taken into account in looking at future development here. Likewise, the city has endorsed the growing Transit Communities Compact, which has extended, this was a city council action, which has extended the walk shed from a quarter mile to a half mile. And so we are well within this half mile walk shed, as you can see from the station on this map. And as I indicated at the beginning, we've reached out not only to the community, but to Forterra, to FutureWise. We've handed out the FutureWise's letter of today to other regional groups to help us try to craft an appropriate solution on this site. Now, let me be clear, the comprehensive plan amendment that we're proposing to you is not going to grant a carte blanche. It's not going to allow development of any type across the site. It will at least open the door to create a process by which we can come into the city and actually have the city consider an application. So we'll take more time on the 14th to go into detail on this. This is just an overview. Happy to answer any questions, but we appreciate your willingness to consider this. We've worked hard to try to do this right over 3 years, and we're hopeful at least to have our day in front of the city council, ultimately, to let them determine, is this the appropriate future? So.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you.
Next up, Ms. Karen Campbell.
My name is Karen Campbell, 2447 160th Avenue Northeast, Bellevue 98008, Sherwood Forest neighborhood. I agree with everything that's been said by the previous speakers who spoke out against the BTC application, with the exception of the one woman who said develop the meadow. It's the first time I've heard somebody say develop the meadow but keep the trees. We could all save ourselves a lot of time. We don't really need to be here tonight if the PUD was kept in place and the city would just stand up and say, the PUD is in place, it's been in place for over 40 years, the residents don't want to change, it could save all these residents a lot of time, a lot of travel time, it could save you members a lot of time. You don't need to hear things over and over and over again. It could save a lot of time and therefore money. So it would be great to not have to be here every few years. Every time the property is sold, we're here again. Every year, the BTC owners change their mind on how they want to proceed, and they come up with a new plan. And over and over and over, the local residents don't want what they're planning. And also, because they keep changing their plans, we have no idea of what would actually happen to the property if you granted the change requested. So please do not grant it. Also, BTC has been cutting down trees where they aren't supposed to. And then on the other hand, there are some dead trees that need to be cut down because they are leaning toward power lines and they are not being cut down. So things are just kind of a little bit backwards the way BTC is handling the trees. Traffic is terrible. Pedestrian lives are in danger every time people try to cross the street. There aren't enough crosswalks on Northeast 24th Street or North Up. The city made new cutouts, ADA cutouts, all up and down these streets. They're painted. It's very confusing for cars. They don't know if they're supposed to stop for pedestrians because there aren't any crosswalks. It's almost causing accidents. And because there aren't enough crosswalks, pedestrians can't even get across the street if they even take the buses to and from work. I have counted well over 50 cars in the morning and in the evening trying to get across the street.
I'm going to have to interrupt you. I'm sorry. You're almost from work. Time.
Anyway, please do not accept any changes. We beg you.
Thank you. Ms. Julie Hockett. Up next.
No, I scratched that out. I don't really
have
to speak.
All right, no worries. Thank you, ma'am. Michelle Niethammer.
Sure. Good evening. My name is Michelle Niethammer, and I represent the Foxborough neighborhood. I'm president of the Foxborough Homeowners Association, and this is not the first time I've spoken before this commission. The vision for Bellevue in 2035 is where you want to be. And in our planning doc, it says, Bellevue embraces the future while respecting our past. The Bellevue Technology Center site is a key part of the history of this area, and the site is where the first recorded settler in Crossroads built a seven-room house in 1873. This was the rural area, and the rapid growth in the 50s and 60s marked the end of that rural nature. The Bellevue Technology Center, as many of you know, was developed in 1972 based on a planned unit development process. The PUD was designed to protect the site from large-scale development and to protect the trees in the meadow. The PUD has served the community well over the years, and the restrictions put in place by the PUD were incorporated into the Bellevue Comprehensive Plan as well as through the various sub-area plans. In preparation for this meeting, I actually sat down and read through four of the plans. I read the Bell Red subarea plan, I read the Crossroads subarea plan, I read the Northeast Bellevue subarea plan, and I read the Transportation Facilities plan. And I can tell you that each of these plans took into account BTC when they were written and or updated. So first of all, quick, and I'll go through these as quickly as I can, and I'll share with you pictures, but in the Bell Red plan, the Bell Red area borders the BTC site, and the Overlake Transportation Hub ring goes to 156. According to the plan documents that I've seen, the circle does not expand to BTC. And when I talked to the BTC people at their open house, they said, yet we realize we're kind of outside the half mile. We're just a little bit over. We don't think people are going to walk that far either. That's why we're thinking about building a shuttle to get you to the transport center. Well, if they're building and putting in a shuttle to cart people to the light rail, they're clearly not in the walk shed by their own admission. Now, if you move on to the Crossroads plan, there are specific things in the Crossroads plan that their proposal is absolutely in conflict with. And it's the four policies that govern the Crossroads plan. First of all, maintain land use as depicted in the land use plan. They are supposed to be office, and that's what they should remain. Second, protect existing family neighborhoods from encroachment by more intense uses. Any development at the site would encroach on the neighborhoods. They are proposing a parking garage that would house 1,700 cars. There's no way you can put 1,700 cars on that site and not encroach on the surrounding areas. Number three, encourage land use and density that will not intensify vehicular congestion. There's no way that you can develop that site and not add vehicular congestion. And I would add, if they thought everybody would take light rail, they wouldn't be asking for a really big parking garage, now would they? And last, ensure that any development of the remaining vacant land in Crossroads is compatible with the surrounding use. Again, the PUD helped us define that. And when this subarea plan was written in the 80s, all of these things were taken into consideration. Now, I want to call out one of the things that I thought was really interesting, and I didn't know this, but in the plan, in the Crossroads plan, policy CR35 was written back in the 80s because somebody had the foresight of what was going to go on in this area. And it states, consider restrictions on land development and density as a viable means of controlling unacceptable levels of traffic congestion. That was written in the 80s. And I want you guys to go back and, read all of these plans, because the purpose of a planning document is to serve the community for a very long time. The purpose of the PUD is to serve the community for a long time. The plans are really good. A lot of the problems were foreseen in these plans. But if we go and change stuff, you have to not change one plan, the Crossroads plan. You have to change five plans, because this site sits at the intersection of so many plans. And the people from Northeast Bellevue cannot get out of their neighborhoods into the main traffic corridor because they have to drive past the BTC site. And back in the 80s, this was identified as a potential problem, and it's in the document of the Northeast Bellevue plan. And in the future, as I understand it, the BTC site is moving out of the Crossroads plan into the Northeast Bellevue area, which is largely a residential neighborhood. So I encourage you to go through and look at the history. It's all here. And the plans have been set forth for years.
I'm sorry, I'm going to have to interrupt you.
Sure.
Yeah, if you could just close, please. Yeah.
Sure. In order to achieve our vision set out in the plan has been very thoughtful about the policies guiding the development of the city. In every case, the BTC PUD was a foundational part of the plan for the surrounding areas. The area is going through a period of unprecedented development and growth. We need to leverage the plans and the foresight they have and guide us going forward. BTC should remain protected by the PUD as designed. We need to fix our infrastructure, complete development already in plan, and make Crossroads in Northeast Bellevue a place you want to call home.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Cindy Lamb, please.
My name is Cindy Lamb. I live at 16230 Northeast 24th Street, the Sherwood neighborhood. I've been there almost 20 years, and I agree with most of my fellow neighbors that we don't want to see a change, but I think they've laid out the reasons that we don't want to see a change. What I would like to say is that if you're going to mess with the plan and make amendments, that you need to have a compelling reason, and I have yet to hear a compelling reason. What I'm seeing is something that's going to adversely affect our lives. But I haven't seen the benefit or return for the community or for myself. Only negativity. That's it.
Thank you. Else Bloom.
Good evening.
Good evening.
My name is Else Blumer. I live in 1010 185th Avenue Northeast. That's in Tam O'Shanter.
It's about one block east of Westlake Sammamish Parkway, so about as far east in Bellevue as you can get. There's lots of reasons for me to come to downtown Bellevue. I have two little kids. We love the library here. We love the new Kids Quest. Let's not talk about parking, though. Amazing shopping and restaurants, and it also happens to have a lot of great preschools. So I do commute into downtown Bellevue quite a bit. Sadly, out of our neighborhood, there's only two ways to get to downtown Bellevue. It's either north up, Northeast 20th, or 24th Street. Both of those, as you have probably heard from many of my neighbors, are a disaster for a big part of the day. We have Interlakes High School right there. We have Sherwood Forest Elementary School. Those clog up Northeast 24th Street for a big chunk of the day. And then, of course, north up, we have Microsoft traffic. Now, Microsoft traffic, what I'm experiencing where I'm living, is not so much local residents or Bellevue residents even trying to get to work. It's people coming from east of Bellevue. We have a lot of people from Sammamish, Issaquah. Now, even Snoqualmie is being built up. They're leveling entire hillsides. I don't know if anybody's been out there recently, but they're doing to Snoqualmie what they've just done to Issaquah. They're building. All those people need to get to or through Bellevue to get to work. So Westlake, Sammamish, pretty much a parking lot these days, all the way to Redmond. So I can only imagine how much worse things are going to be once the apartments across the street from Bellevue Technology Center will be in place. It's thousands more cars coming online. Live apartments is still not full. Then there's a 1.2 million square foot complex coming on, not quite coming online yet, but under construction, the old group health site in Redmond. So to me, it's a little scary to think about what this will look like if now we develop the BTC site as well. Frankly, already for me, sometimes it's easier to go spend my money in Issaquah and in Redmond, because if I go Westlake Sammamish Counterflow, it's faster than coming to downtown Bellevue, and I hate doing that. This is a place I live. I want to be able to live here 24/7 and not go next door, because it's just easier to access. So essentially, I oppose further development, not only of the BTC site, but of the area in general, because the congestion is unbearable as it is. I was surprised to see the level of service in the entire city does not ever seem to go below an E+. I don't know. I guess that's open for a different debate. But anyway, I would like to see a infrastructure plan developed by the City of Bellevue in conjunction with the City of Redmond, because that's one of the issues that we are running into as well. We're right on that border between the two cities, and it seems like there's not always a whole lot of communication going on between the two cities. So I think we really do need an updated infrastructure plan before more development is allowed. I also read the comprehensive plan. I would like to call your attention to policies TR35 and 46.
I think you're going to have to close if you could, please. Thank you.
One more line.
Please, yep.
If I wanted to sit in traffic in a concrete jungle, I would have moved to Seattle, not to Bellevue. Yeah. Thank you.
Next, Haddon Hoppert.
Hi, I'm Haddon Hoppert, 1905 168th Avenue Northeast. Yes, I'm against it. I wanted to actually talk a little bit about the threshold review process part. In particular, I think a couple of people have talked about that the application doesn't do anything about significant change. There hasn't been. This property has been reviewed a bunch of times, frequently. It's in all the planning meetings. It's in all of the plans. This is not a suddenly surprise. You've got a huge development. Oh, my God, what can we do with this spare space we have? In particular, I wanted to mention the SCR 16. That's the change from parks and public spaces to allowing private organizations to give us green space. That's sort of what the PUD was supposed to do to begin with. So it's hard to believe that that is a thing that would last, because that's what we're fighting right now. The CR 63, to allow for senior housing, I don't believe any planning committee has said, you know, what Crossroads really needs is more senior housing. I'm not sure why they want to. And then CR 66, that's, as I think a few people have pointed out, effectively gets rid of the PUD and the contaminant agreement. And that that's, I think, a fairly large hammer to use here. And then the final thing I want to mention is, and I hate to say this, but I believe the people who have applied have always been honest but disingenuous. They say, I got printouts for you. They say they were within the walk shed, and that's, get handed around. And yes, their property does hit the 0.5 mile range. Not much, barely. If you actually try to walk it, it's 0.7 miles and up and down a fairly large hill. Similarly, the single voice that was for this said, we're not going to do high rise, but they specifically say in CR 66, well, we want to get rid of the height restriction just in this one area. And I think we've seen that general behavior through all of the process that this owner has done, which is, they're not lying. They really aren't. But boy, oh boy, we want the words to be as pro and squishy as possible. And please, when considering this application, realize what those words could mean. That's all I have to say.
Thank you. It's Ken. I'm sorry, I'm not able to read your last name. It's 16223 Northeast 28th.
I'm not speaking.
All right, thank you, sir. So we have about five more people signed up. So pause. If your comments have been expressed earlier, I would request that maybe you pass on so we can use the time to get to the discussion as well as the other public comment. But I will go through the list of names. I believe it's a Brian Uminel or Amel. I'm not able to.
Okay.
Thank you, sir. We have a Janet Castaneda.
My name is Janet Castaneda. I live in 2447 161st Avenue Northeast. And I just want to add a little bit about Forterra. I went to the open house when they were presenting. And it was pretty interesting because I asked one of the persons there, like, what will be the benefit of going with a plan with Forterra instead of keeping the PUD, and she couldn't answer. Basically, the PUD has been protecting the whole area, and what Forterra is doing is just taking pieces and protecting what is left. So just keep that in mind when you're reviewing. And the other thing is, like, she took me to her manager because she couldn't explain me, and then the manager says something like, oh, yeah, because we're going to enforce it. We're going to make a contract. And I was thinking to myself, well, we have the PUD. The PUD is a pretty much a deal with the city and the neighborhoods. And it has been working for so many years. I don't need Forterra to come here and just protect a little piece of what we already have protected by the PUD. So that's my comment.
Thank you, ma'am. I have a Mark. I can't quite read the last name. It looks like a Mark Marin. 7113 182nd Avenue Northeast. All right, we'll just keep moving on. I believe that's the last of the public comment for the BTC.
I didn't get you
back up. Oh, please, if you would, yeah, come on.
Pamela Johnson, 3741 122nd Avenue Northeast, Bellevue. Okay, so one comment I wanted to make was that the King County Transit access to King County Transit memos, it says that according to King County, transit-oriented development typically occurs within high-density mixed-use development in 10-minute walk circle, which is defined as in a 0.25 radius of the transit center, not a half a mile. So it's a half a mile total, but of the transit center, it's only a quarter mile. And they don't reach that at all. And the 10-minute walk is not in that range. So it said it's greater than... This is from the walk from the transit center is about 0.6 miles, which is greater than 0.5 miles, and it's an 8 to 10 minute walk defined by transit oriented design. So that's the one point I wanted to make. The other point I wanted to make is that although these people are talking about their section of Crossroads, Crossroads is a whole area, and so it changes the nature of the entire Crossroads Center if you put that. And Crossroads, one of the things that they have in their plan is city within a city, and this is not their city center. This is the neighborhood center. It's only like given to them as use out of residential property as a benefit to the property owners as property and as private citizens and as kind of like a coordination, and they want to break that coordination. Bellred, downtown Wilburton, we got plenty of spaces that need to be grown up before this Crossroads area needs to grow up. Crossroads is a vibrant community. Their thing is diversity. This is not enhancing the diversity of the neighborhood. We have a comprehensive plan that says we want to get to 40% canopy. This is not going to help us get to 40% canopy if we use that. So thank you.
Thank you. Stuart Heath up next. I think we have Stuart.
Good evening, Chair DeVatos and members of the Commission. My name is Stuart Heath. I live at 13252 Northeast 47th Street, Bellevue, Washington, 98005. The last time I appeared before you at your last meeting, I was speaking as Chair of the Parks and Community Services Board. I want to make clear that my comments tonight are not from the Parks and Community Services Board, but are my personal follow-up our discussion at the last meeting. I would like to make a proactive, positive suggestion about the CAC general process. That's the reason I'm coming back tonight. At our last meeting, when we were presenting, Commissioner Carlson asked if the Parks and Community Services Board had an appointee to the Downtown Livability Initiative, CAC. And Commissioner Barksdale asked some really good questions of us regarding the Wilburton CAC. And it just got me to thinking a little bit about how we can work together as community liaisons and representatives. I want to start with respect to the Downtown Livability Initiative and say that that was not before the Parks and Community Services Board when we cast our vote that the Downtown Livability Initiative Incentive Plan did not meet the needs of Parks and Community Services. It was never discussed in our vote. I don't believe personally was ever intended as a comment on the CAC process. Since our meeting, I have reread the Downtown Livability Initiative CAC as well as all of the meeting minutes, and they did a lot of great work. In the CAC final report, they actually note the need for more parks in downtown, and they note the need to study the issue further. After further study, we're simply saying there's not enough evidence that the parks goals will be met. And so if I said anything that was critical, I didn't mean to. In fact, during the process, Commissioner Lang, who was co-chair, said that his concept was the CAC met and then gave to the various boards and commissions meaty subjects to chew on, and that was my understanding as well. But in reality, what happened during the Downtown Livability Initiative, from my perspective as a Parks and Community Services Board member, is that there was really no report back to us. We were never asked to deliberate on any issue, and we never actually made any decisions. I personally kept asking, and was always told, later, later, later. When I reread the CAC report, they're actually raising the issues as how does the Parks and Community Services Board feel about this? How is the Ashwood Park Master Plan, which is going to come before our board, going to fit in with the CAC? But for some reason, something happened, and there wasn't that closing of the loop. Afterwards, the chair of the Parks and Community Services Board at that time made some comments. The staff expressed frustration with the process. So I became chair in the late summer, early fall last year, and I knew that the Wilburton CAC was coming up on the agenda. So I did a couple things. I asked the council liaison at the Parks and Community Services Board meeting in October, what does she want us to work on in 2017? The main answer was the Wilburton CAC. I said, great, let's do it. Let's work together.
Stuart, I'm sorry, but you're almost at time, so if you could maybe
get close. Okay, maybe what I should say is that nothing has come back to us, And so I would like to, I don't really know how to fit in. And if there was a check-in point or if there was communication between the CAC and the Parks and Community Services, doesn't really matter for me personally if we're in or we're out. But I think consistency of communication and coordination is important so we don't end up where we are on the DLI. That's it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I actually came down to listen to the conversation about what we talked about last week, but it looks like I'm going to run out of time. So see you next time.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. So we're going to move to the public comment for livability. And I'm going to make a request. If in the last 30 days, if you've had the opportunity to present or talk to us, would request that perhaps you defer to the public comment at the end of the session. We do want to make sure that people who have not had the opportunity to talk to us over the last month perhaps get some time this evening. So I'm going to go through the list, and if you've had a chance to talk to us, I would request if you defer, please. So first up on the list, I have Mr. Kevin Whitaker.
How you doing?
Good evening.
My name is Kevin Whitaker. I live at 10700 Northeast 4th Street, Unit 2002. It's Bellevue Towers. I'm noticing a common theme here with people talking about the issue that was just discussed previously, and I think what people are going to be talking about now with the livability recoding of downtown building codes is a feeling of disenfranchisement and kind of an abrogation of social and legal contracts that people have had longstanding, where they had assumptions that they made when they moved to this community, and I think people feel like they're getting the rug kind of yanked out from underneath them. My little microcosm is that I live in Bellevue Towers. When I purchased there, I did my due diligence, and I looked at the potential impact on my what is a gigantic investment for me as a individual homeowner. My biggest source of value in my home is a view that I have out of my apartment. So I looked at the building code restrictions in the sight lines for those views, and they still say 250 feet is the maximum height for that area that I'm looking at, which I believe is 202 south, I think, if I'm getting that right. I might have my numbers wrong. Yeah. But 250 feet, which, of course, there's also some caveats in there that are hard for a normal person to figure out unless you dig really hard into the code, and then you find out, okay, there's a 15% waiver if you put a vaulted ceiling in the top of your building, and et cetera, or you can go up to, like, 305 feet, which even then, it was still, factored into my purchase process, my decision-making process. And now we're looking at increasing those height limits and also decreasing setbacks and other just overall degradations in livability, which is what we're talking about here, that are kind of a wealth transfer of sorts, in that somebody who bought a developable piece of property in downtown Bellevue is now capitalizing on the fact where they purchased that piece of property based off of the building codes that existed, just like all the rest of us did, and now they're trying to get the codes changed so that they can reap a windfall by being able to build more building, which is, that makes sense. There's the Downtown Bellevue Incentive Zoning Update briefing book from January of this year is a tough read. It's dense, glossy, a lot of great data in there. I'm going to be honest, it's a little bit over my head. But it comes to the conclusion, which is unsurprising, which is if we make these changes, the developers will make more money. And that's pretty obvious, I think, to everybody. However, it doesn't do a good faith analysis of where that money is coming from, which is from local homeowners and residents. And so just to summarize real quick, I think that this issue is closely tied to the one that was just discussed, which is that people are feeling like they're being the legal and social contracts that they've been dealing with, that they've been making assumptions based off for a long time, are getting abrogated by our elected representatives, are being allowed to be abrogated. And that is kind of what everyone's concern is right now. Please take that into consideration when you're looking at these zoning changes. Thanks.
Thank you, sir.
Michelle Herman up next. I have two names, Michelle Herman, and then I have the Bellevue Towers livability. So, and you're welcome to use separate time slots or come together. It's your decision.
So I was representing a group called the Bellevue Towers Livability Initiative. We've got about 100 members. I'm from Bellevue Towers, 10700 Northeast 4th Street. So we've got a summary of the livability update.
Sir, could you just state your name, too, for the record?
Bill Herman.
Thank you.
Okay, so when we first learned about the livability initiative, we were told that the land use code was going to be updated to create open spaces, add light and air by having taller and skinnier buildings, fund new amenities, and improve livability. After 3 years, where are we? The update has become a rewrite that is incomprehensible. The open spaces aren't there. The park board states that it fails. The plaza requirement has been dropped. Increased light and air has become decreased light and air because we are getting taller and no thinner. The developers removed changes requiring buildings that were 3% skinnier. They removed the amendments calling for increased setbacks and tower spacing. A recent change allows developers to earn 90% of the new maximum height without providing funding for amenities. Developers stated last week that developers are unlikely to participate in the amenity system. So our biggest office towers are now going to fund zero amenities, be 20% taller, and 0% skinnier. In the MU district, the towers are going to be 80% taller, fund nothing, and even be fatter. So taller with the same floor plate is a formula for increased density across the board. Equalization is totally unrelated to livability. A 15% height increase is recommended for bonus height wherever we have interesting roof form. First, a memorable skyline and design outcomes ranked last in the resident survey as contributing to livability. So a 15% bonus for interesting roof form is a terrible livability trade-off. Second, this bonus fails on its stated goal. What is memorable about the small buildings? The tallest buildings cannot get this 15% bonus. Third, there is no accountability. Every box built earns the bonus. Where is the review? To add insult to injury, an amendment is made to add 20 feet for mechanical equipment. This added height magically doesn't count in your height, unless you are in the O2, which, how does that transparent. So where do we stand on livability? A survey of 200 residents ranked the top three attributes of livability as walkability, traffic, and parking. The city is in denial that traffic is a problem. The city says that adding density is not significant, and no study is needed. The city states that the level of service is good and will be okay when we're all done. The residents, on the other hand, already are experiencing problems, and we can anticipate gridlock and frustration. So we ask, why add fuel to the fire? The draft code is silent on parking. There is no study after all these years. How can we evaluate these proposals without any data? We need informed decisions. Why make a quick decision when what we have is working okay? Let's get this right. This plan will not fund amenities. So this is called a livability initiative, but what we all know is that the residents of downtown don't want it. So let's call it what it is, a development initiative. If you want to call it a livability initiative, let's put it to the vote of downtown residents. This process was flawed from the start. The Citizens Advisory Committee had no representation from downtown residents. The outcome is a transfer of value from residents to developers, with the city getting their cut. This process should not start over with resident input. The policies need to be evaluated on facts and data and not the need to fund special projects. The result needs to be transparent, easily understood, and verifiable. Please recommend to council to leave what we have on the books until we can get it right.
Michelle, I know last time you had your name signed up, so if you want to use it, please go ahead.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Hello, commissioners. My name is Michelle Herman. I'm Bellevue Towers resident, Unit 3616. I've submitted lengthy comments yesterday, and I want to summarize very specific proposals. As in addition, you've heard lots of concerns, but we also want to provide specific proposals to address some of those concerns. I would like to summarize them now. So I've got three areas generally, building form and height, amenities and incentives, and the lack of studies and data that are informing these land use code updates. So on the building height and form, the first thing that we're requesting or we're asking you to really consider is to treat the western portion of the O2 South differently. So I want to state, you know, as resident, I'm opposed to all upzoning. But if you're going to upzone, please consider that district to be separate, that area, that portion of the district. It's, as you've heard over and over again, Bellevue Towers residents, as well as other residents in the downtown corridor, have relied on the maximum height specified in the land use code of 250 feet. And now there's proposals of more than 100 feet on top of that. We paid premiums for those. It's not only our view and our value, but these are our homes. Second of all, we want to ensure that in the beginning, you know, open space, light, view corridors. And then last week when I was sitting here, I heard developer after developer after developer push back on the good proposals that were made of 40-foot setbacks, 80-foot tower spacing, 10% reduction in floor plate. And then without any resident feedback to that developer, those developer opposition, it seemed like all of you just said, yeah, okay, well, we'll do it that way. And I just want you to know, as a resident, we really, really, really favor the 40-foot setback, the 80-foot tower spacing, and the 10% floor plate reduction. In fact, we'd like to see larger floor plate reduction because that's what's going to give us our open spaces, our view corridors, our light. Those are really important things to livability. We also, you know, and you've heard this over and over again, but the code is not transparent. I know there's been a great effort to make the update more transparent in terms of dimensional requirements, but it's still not transparent with regard to height and FAR. If there's exemptions or exceptions or, you know, incentive bonuses, they are not all included. For example, under the current code, there's a 15-foot addition, which it doesn't specify, but somewhere it does, but we don't know where, for building, you know, for height. About, you know, equipment on the roof. Well, now it's going to be 20 feet. So if it says the maximum height's 345, it's really 365. We need transparency so we really understand what the code says. I won't have time to get through the other parts, but I do want to say on the amenity system, it's far too complex. It doesn't serve our needs. We need to have a mechanism to reevaluate it every few years to make sure we've got the right amenities and that the public, there's got to be some measurable metrics so that we can measure if there is any public benefit at all whatsoever that we're getting. And it needs to be a regular review or assessment of those. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Don Hassan, up next, please.
Hi, thank you. My name is Don Hassan. I live at 650 Bellevue Way Northeast in One Lincoln Tower. I just found out about this. It seemed like a zoning change just last Saturday when I went to an emergency preparedness meeting. And I do get the blue bulletin from Bellevue, and I always read it. And I never saw anything about a zoning change. And when I bought my condo over in One Lincoln Tower, I did my due diligence and I found out, oh, the zoning is 250 feet. And then later on I find out, well, actually last week I found out that 250 feet really isn't 250 feet, but it's 250 feet plus 15% plus if they do something to the roof, they get another additional. And for all the people who've moved into, let's say, floor 26 in Bellevue Tower or other places, and all of a sudden they find out that, oh, your view is going to be obstructed all the way up to 305 feet. That's, you know, they made a home investment, and it's really, really shocking. And they pay more for the higher view, and then they're going to have it obstructed, not because they didn't do their due diligence, but because the zoning has just changed. And so I just would like and encourage the committee to stick with the current building code until they can actually wait and see what the absorption rate is going to be with the Bellevue expansion and with the 425 center, so that way we aren't guessing and we're not using computer algorithms to figure out what the traffic and the parking situation is going to be. Let us just wait before we make a mistake of building or allowing such a large building, so that we can just do a true analysis of it. Thank you.
I have a Monique Perrault.
You talking to either one of these?
Yes.
My name is Monique Verger-Perrault. I live at 498-200 and 33rd Place Southeast in Sammamish, 98074. I'm actually president of the board of One Lincoln Tower. I've been the president of the board since 2006, since the inception of the board. I'm also a realtor, and I started my career in Bellevue selling pre-construction condominiums and condominium conversions in the late 90s. I was the sales manager for the Astoria on Main Street. I was the sales manager for the Mondrian on the Park. So I've seen a lot of dynamics and people, you know, with different views about what to build, how they can build it, what the views will be and will not be. I can tell you that I think a lot of us were naive, because I own a rental in One Lincoln Tower, to the fact that Kemper was actually going to build two Lincoln Tower as tall as One Lincoln Tower. There were a lot of agitated people, and I know that from being president of the board. And I think it was somewhat of a naivety, because that was the core of Bellevue. That's what was supposed to be built there, that height. But I think now people have wised up to the fact that every time you show a high-rise somewhere in Bellevue and there's a parcel that looks like it can be built on, someone says, what is the zoning? What's the height restriction there? And I think that people make their buying decisions, I know, based on those height restrictions. And a lot of these people are retired. They're buying this home in a place that they think they're going to retire to, and they're buying the view. And I just want to say, from a humanistic standpoint, I have a lot of times where I ask people, why did you buy this particular unit? And they look at me with some disbelief and say, I didn't buy this unit. I bought the view. And if you're sitting there with them in their unit, and they'll walk you over to their favorite spot that is the view in their particular home and say, this is why I bought this home. I didn't buy a unit. So I just want to express that for some of these people, it's the most important financial decision they've ever made. And when you take away their view, their price per square foot will dramatically decrease. The emotional stress would be difficult for a lot of people who think they're going to literally live there till they die. For a lot of people, that's true. And so when you make these kind of quirky manipulations to raise heights, and, you know, they're not transparent, they don't seem to be public, it affects everyone. And I think, you know, you serve the people, and we are the people. Thank you very much.
I have a few more names signed up for the livability. I believe these folks have had a chance to talk to us in the last month. If that's not the case, if you would please raise your hand. So if not, I would request that you please wait until we have the public comment at the close, so we can proceed with the agenda.
Sure. We'd be happy to do so, Jack Papilla. I just, contrary to our prior practice, we're actually here to talk about something else tonight, which is parking. And so we have some input to provide you. I just ask, as you're working through it, if keep an open mind, and we'll give you our feedback later on.
Thank you, Jack. Appreciate it. Thank you very much. Yeah. So seeing none, then we'll just keep moving on. We are fairly close to staying on track as far as the agenda is concerned.
Yes.
That's a good point. Anybody else who, thank you, Michelle. Anybody else who has, would like to use the public comment to share, to communicate? Yes, ma'am, please, come on up.
Is it okay to comment on B2C?
Sure, if you like, yeah, please.
Right. Hi, my name is Leanna. I'm at 1829-160th Avenue Northeast. We're relatively recent Bellevue residents, a couple years ago, and we were certainly enticed by what Bellevue has to offer in terms of livability and green spaces, diverse communities, and so forth. We've been terrified to learn that there's already been over 1,000 units approved for development within a mile radius of BTC, which also basically means within a mile of our home. I concur with prior comments that we are maxed out in terms of impact that has already occurred, and we still have many more units that have already been approved to come. So I had an opportunity to go to the open houses that have been hosted by the developer and have a chance to ask them some questions, and I hope you will do so as well in the conversation that they mentioned they're going to have with you. Some of the questions around tree preservation. They're talking about how this is not going to be detrimental. I ask you to consider that what they're talking about is replacing old growth trees, 30-year-plus trees, with brand-new plants that are going to take a long time to develop. That's one. Ask them about the wildlife. There are many species of animals, birds, that call this place home. What's going to happen to them? And also, I would like to suggest that you also ask how did they conduct how is it possible that the traffic study was conducted a couple weeks before school started last summer? So I echo the comments that were made previously about the ethics and the tactics. They may be in line with the law, but you have to look past it for the best of our interest. Thanks.
Thank you. So, unless there is somebody else who would like to use public comment, we're going to keep moving on with the schedule. Yes?
Tim Jackson, PMF. We just want to respect all the opportunity for the community to talk tonight, so we're going to walk away. But just wanted to let you all know we submitted a letter and had a couple of comments in there that staff has heard.
That's right.
Just like Jack said, just you guys could take a look at that.
Thank you, Tim. Appreciate it. So next up, we have the study session. I'll give it to you, Mr. Cullen, to give us the context and maybe help us kick off the
sure.
topic.
Sure. Thank you, Chair Davidos. This is the threshold review study session for plan amendment, the Bellevue Technology Center plan amendment. And tonight you've got Nicholas Matz, who's a senior planner with planning and community development from the city staff. He's going to be presenting to you. The purpose of tonight's meeting is to give you an overview of the plan amendment and introduce you to it. And I believe Mr. Matz has got two actions that he's requesting, and he'll go into more detail with that. It should be noted that this is not the public hearing. The public hearing, I believe Mr. Matz is going to be asking you to set the public hearing. And there's no final decision being made tonight on the plan amendment itself. So given that, we've got 1 hour slotted for the agenda for this, and then when Mr. Matz is done, it'll be open to the Planning Commission for discussion. The anticipated output or outcome is that you will, I believe, set the public hearing, or first set the geographic scope of the plan amendment and set the public hearing, and give direction to staff as to any types of information you think would be helpful to inform you leading into the public hearing itself. And that's in the spirit of what we had agreed upon at the retreat back in November that we are asking and inviting you to participate in the scoping. So that's the order of business, the anticipated outcomes, and with that, I'll turn it back to you, Mr. Chair.
Could you turn it back on, though, because it timed out?
Sure.
So I love Mr. Matt's part. I love that every time Terry does that. Mm-hmm. So, and I do feel like kind of like wait staff coming to set the table for you after you've already eaten the meal, given what you've heard tonight about the BTC application. So we'll just take a couple steps back. We'll frame the conversation that we're going to ask you to have during threshold review, both tonight and when we ask you to schedule the public hearing. So that's the framework where I'll be coming from tonight. And obviously, we're looking to have you direct us with the things you want to find out so that we can incorporate that into the staff materials. So
thank you, Mr. Mayor. If I could just maybe, just to, again, you know, building on your comment to frame up that discussion, maybe you could give us an update on what has changed since the last time this particular proposal came through. So as the commission, we can level set as to what happened 2.5 years ago and what is new, what is different.
So would you like me to do that now, or would you like me to incorporate that into the presentation?
Can I reinforce what the chairman is saying? Again, we visited this issue just 2.5 years ago, Nicholas, and a majority of the commission was here for that vote. So if there is something that we missed, or if there's something that has changed, then let's make that the focus of our discussion and conversation, because I don't think we need to start from day one and do a complete overview. Just what is it from 2.5 years ago that has changed, and what is it that somehow you thought that we may have missed?
If I may, Mr. Chair, one question I have, were all the planning commissioners present and on board at that time, back in 2004? So there are commissioners that have no prior knowledge. Also, it's important to get this into the record, because there's people that are following this outside of this meeting, too. So this will go up on the website. I think it's important that Mr. Matz be given the opportunity to present the information that is, so that there's a comprehensive look at what is being, as it's introduced, this plan amendment is introduced, and leading into the request to set the public hearing and the geographic scoping. I think that is important for everybody involved that we do that. And expediency is not necessarily going to get us a better result.
Thank you, Mr. Cullen. I do hear you, and I acknowledge it. Just one caveat, perhaps, as you present, Mr. Matz, if you could, as Commissioner Carlson said, emphasize what is different. So that way, those commissioners who were here for the discussion at the last round can get a refresher. So if you could, please, thank you.
So I'm going to outline that when I get to the details of the application thing. If I miss that,
you will not miss it.
Call me back, yeah. Again, I love that Mr. Matz stuff. Cool. So anyway, we are here before you tonight in study session to introduce to you the sole site-specific comprehensive plan amendment in this year's 2017 annual comprehensive plan amendment process. You did, on March 1st, 2017, we did present you with a framework for the entire process, giving you a timeline, some of the detailed steps that are going to be involved in threshold review and final review, and outlined the applications that have come in to us this year. With deference to the concerns that you want to express about what's changed, folks get a bite of the apple every time they come through, and it's up to us to make sure that they have that opportunity to do that, regardless of how we've characterized before. And I will tell you, without recommending on this application, it's a different application than the one you saw in 2014. So very quickly, for your benefit and benefit of people following in the audience and elsewhere, the 2017, the annual comprehensive plan amendment process contains some specific steps associated with application. We use this list of initiated applications to consider proposals to amend the comprehensive plan. Another way to look at this, while limiting this to an annual process, we do use threshold review to produce proposed amendments. Essentially, we use threshold review to establish a list of amendments that you're going to dive in on. And, some other jurisdictions call that setting a docket. So very much like the Supreme Court, for example, they tell people the cases they're going to look at, and then they leave off the cases that they're not. So that's what you're doing here with threshold review as a means to set up the applications that could potentially amend the comprehensive plan. That the work program is established when council acts on your recommendation to establish it, and you will do that after the course of threshold review. And then that work program goes through the final review process. Again, you'll use study sessions and public hearings to consider and recommend, and you will then direct recommendations to council, and council will take action on those amendments. This is kind of the stuff you should read when you click accept on a software agreement. But these are the steps that tell people this is what we're doing, this is what we're doing, this is what's going to happen. And so again, we outline that both in our CPA guide online, which is updated in 2016, and we strive to make sure that we're communicating that to you and to your constituents when we go through this process. Tonight, as Mr. Cullen pointed out, we will be introducing you to the privately initiated CPA. We will ask you to provide direction to staff on the expansion of the geographic scope, and I'll spend more time on that in a little bit. And that's all the language of it. And then we will ask you to schedule a threshold review hearing date as part of early and continuous public participation so that people know and are ready to do that. I want to qualify before we go on, the expansion of the geographic scope discussion that we're having tonight is not a judgment on the application, but a staff assessment that the criteria has been met in order for you to give us direction about how big a pie we're going to be noticing when we actually take it to public hearing. If there is an expansion of the geographic scope, we extend the notice proportionately because the basic requirement is 500 feet. We are looking this year, and I'll briefly dive into the whole range of the applications. We are looking this year at two citywide site-specific 2017 CPAs, the Crossroads BTC application, which you're all familiar with now, bounded by north of 156th and northeast 24th, as well as the Eastgate Office Park application. That's already queued up for final review. As you recall, you recommended it through threshold review last year, and over the course of the fall, the applicant asked to defer it for consideration for this year, in part because the Eastgate Land Use Code amendments, which were going to have a relationship between what they wanted to have through the comp plan and then through the development review, that had not yet been adopted. So we suggested to them that, yeah, that would work. That expectation is still in place that Eastgate Office Park will be a merit-based review this fall with expectations that Eastgate Land Use Code amendments will be in place for them to push back against. So that's where that is right now. The other final review amendments that are on deck right now, and again, we also have this online, the Complete Streets Conference Plan Amendment that the City Council initiated earlier this year, as well as the Downtown Transportation Plan Amendments that Council also initiated this year. So you'll see those in a package. Still to be queued up is the East Main Conference Plan Amendment. These are all stuff we mentioned to you in March 1st. And we'll still look for Council to be providing direction on initiating that sometime this year. So again, that's the extent of what you'll be looking at this year in terms of conference plan amendments. So the Eastgate, the Bellevue Technology Center, Crossroads Suburban Bellevue Technology Center application, they are existing office buildings with surface and building parking. I direct your attention in your packets to page 2 as well as attachment 2. Which are the details of that. I'm going to spend just a little bit of time on that, and I will focus my discussion on what's different between this and the 2014 application. And I also encourage you at this point to make sure that we understand the questions or the data, the information that you want us to incorporate. We'll incorporate it into the staff recommendation based around the decision criteria, and when we present that back to you for the public hearing. And note that staff recommendation will be out 3 weeks before the publication of the notice of the hearing date. So So this privately initiated application would propose new policies in the general land use and economics section of the Crossroads Sudbury Plan. It would amend policies CR 16, 63, and 66 and amend the land use map accordingly. Essentially, and I direct you to that, again, to that attachment piece that's in your packets at page 9. Excuse me, wrong. Try that again. Starting on page 6. So, what KBS they're looking to understand the appropriate land use that could encourage redevelopment of their site. And they're, by doing that, they're suggesting new policies which will look at how to introduce what's called transit-oriented development principles onto the site. They take inspiration from development that is occurring in Bell Red and that is proposed in the urban center across the street and the Overlake Urban Center in Redmond. But at the same time, they're looking, from their perspective, to carry forward the hallmark principles of the policy and the regulatory development that has made the site what it is today. So in other words, they're looking for a way to, they believe, can maintain both the principle and the fact of the meadow, the tree areas, and probably more importantly, and we're going to spend more time on this when we do the staff, is the impacts of traffic, how they get generated, where they're going to be going, and those sorts of things. And we are working very closely with our transportation staff to suss out the modeling that's going to be necessary in order for us to get a handle on that. Remembering at the same time that at this level of comprehensive plan amendment, we don't have a project in front of us. We have an expectation about development capacity. So our numbers will be planning, not traffic study. They'll be planning level numbers to try to get that sense. But that's also legitimate for you in terms of assessing the build-out capacity or what sometimes is called the worst that could happen under an amendment to the comprehensive plan. We don't necessarily react to the proposal somebody wants, but we react to the capacity that's being created both in the land use designation and then subsequently in the zoning action that takes place. They're also suggesting that, and again, so there's two parts to that, introducing these ideas of TOD principles, amending existing plans to address what they believe are the hallmark elements of the site, and then addressing some of the other concerns and considerations around the Crossroads Sudbury plan that it has for introducing additional residential development in the area. So the significant change, I didn't mean to say significant, I just meant to say change. The change, because I'm not doing that yet, the change is in CR 66, whereas the 2014 application pretty much focused on taking CR 66, which provides the most direct policy direction for how the BTC site has been developed and how it would be developed in the future. It essentially, CR 66 said, office use is appropriate on this site. And when that was translated to the PUD in 1972, then it got regulatory teeth and constrained the amount of office development on the site in order to identify and protect the meadow and the tree areas, as well as to manage mitigation from the traffic impacts that were expected by the approximately 325,000 square feet of office that was going to be built at the time. So in 2014, CR 66 was just let us get rid of that, let us get to this idea that we can manage the site in a different way. The issues around addressing principles for retaining the meadow and dealing with the tree area and managing traffic were more vague. And the commission's decision and the staff recommendation to not advance on our threshold, we felt that the time wasn't right for this conversation. We didn't know exactly what we were looking at. So we did encourage the applicants to look at other alternatives, to look at other paths by which they could address the appropriate redevelopment of the site. And the rezone, Mr. McCullough and Mr. Morrison mentioned the rezone action that took place to do that. And ultimately, the city having gone through that exercise as far as they could go, the city concluded that we would need to come back and revisit the comp plan amendment process. So what they've done this time is they've looked, rather than looking at just fixing the site in CR 66, they've introduced other elements that look at the site from a different perspective.
Okay. Commissioner Carlson, please.
Now we're getting somewhere. What could they have done 2.5 years ago versus what would they be able to do if this were approved?
I don't think I can speak to that. Are you talking about the development capacity that
yeah.
would be available to them?
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay. There's no way around. It's a 46-acre site that's zoned office, and even if you use all of our development regulations, that's an amount that in ballpark could be more than twice what's there now. And so
under existing
zoning. So the issue, as has been accurately identified both by the applicant and by the communities, the PUD exists as the agreed upon point of appropriate development on the site.
Okay.
Roughly 325,000 square feet of office with associated under building or building parking and surface parking. Without that, and that directly allowed for retaining the meadow and the tree areas as significant elements of the site, and it set a limit on the traffic impacts that could occur from that much office. Without that consideration, there is at least twice the amount of square foot that could be built on the site with commensurate issues related to what happens to the meadow, what happens to the trees, what happens to the traffic. So what they're doing now is they're asking to reframe that discussion about how those relate and how they balance out each other, and to look at a model that exists across in Bel-Red and in Overlake. So they're looking at a bucket of capacity that's probably twice, and again, that's because it's a 46-acre site.
Mm-hmm.
But they're asking to frame that with a new set of what's an appropriate development, again, addressing the meadow, addressing significant tree retention, and addressing traffic impacts associated with that development. How'd I do? Is there a 2014-2017?
It's certainly helping to clarify.
Okay.
I'm sure we'll have more questions. Commissioner Morris,
absolutely.
Yeah, I'm still, bear with me, I wasn't here for 2014. I'm still not clear on the differences, and you'll probably get to that eventually. You said back in 2014 they were trying to fix the site. What does that mean?
So the PUD is a zoning rule. It says you can't build more than 325,000 square feet on this site.
Mm-hmm.
The owners of the property believe that they can have an appropriate level of redevelopment that still addresses community concerns about what that site represents, both in the neighborhood and by itself, that there is still a relationship that can be developed and regulated between how much office is on that site and the meadow, the trees, and traffic impacts. In 2014, the focus was solely on weakening CR 66 to be able to do more site development. Now, it's not just what CR 66 meant and the direction it provided, because the regulation in place is the zoning. The regulation in place that is saying this much and no farther is the PUD, is the zoning. It's the contract, as the community describes it, that's in place that implements this policy. So what KBS is asking is to have a broader conversation about all of the policies that could affect all of the various ways in which these key site components relate to each other. How much office, where it is, the meadow, the trees, and the traffic impacts that come out of this site on a Northam, on 156th, on a 24th. And they want to do that in the context of what's happening around them. Microsoft Overlake, it's an urban center. It's the same issues that our neighborhoods surrounding downtown have with urban centers. Bel-Red and the role that it's played both you know, you hear people talk about 156th as the bright line and the role that BELRED has played on the other side of that line. So what KBS, we believe, is offering up is asking to talk about specific policies that give more specific direction about developing more of the site.
Thank you.
Thank you. Just a comment about the transportation. Was there a study performed, Mr. Matz? Did you say there was an analysis done?
We are working on developing the framework of that. I know that we've been able to have some meetings with the applicant's traffic consultants, but at this point we're still in-house with our transportation modelers and our long-range planning staff in the transportation department to define how a planning study level of traffic would look.
So it's a TBD still at this point?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
But we will definitely make that part of the review of the site.
So is one of the differences, too, is the current application is utilizing TOD as a justification of why density should be occurring on this site. And I ask if that's one of the differences of before, because we did know the transit center was coming before, but I don't think that was one of the justifications, was TOD, and now TOD, I'm seeing it in here as a justification of proximity.
Right, great, Commissioner. I wouldn't put it the way you did, but I think that's very much the framework about, again, having a broader discussion, looking across the street at those examples and saying, can we have that kind of conversation and how those relationships between the types of uses on the site, how they're mixed, how people access the site, whether it's transit or cars and things like that, all those elements, all those TOD principles they're suggesting could have that discussion here. And that is different from 2014, because in 2014, the focus, and the reason we suggested it wasn't right to talk about this, the focus was simply on lifting the policy implementation for the PUD.
Okay. And also a similarity, I mean, just kind of a net-net, is the 2014 conversation, the current conversation, is expanding the footprint over the site, right? That footprint expanded.
I think they would have ended up with the same amount of capacity in 2014 as it is now. At least the framework now is not increasing the allowed density. It's lifting the what they see as the constraint on how much of that 46 acres can be used.
Right.
Commissioner Brooks, please.
I think it's going to relate to what you're asking.
Yeah, maybe you can ask it a better way.
Can you talk about the implications of the transition between the neighborhood and the property, given the proposed change in language?
Right. So this is office zoning, and it's surrounded. There is some office zoning on the west and north, but essentially it butts up against residentially zoned property. And you always have transition area requirements, which increase setback and add more landscaping in, putting the burden of the buffering on the more intense property. With looking at TOD and with looking at lifting the PUD, the ability to use the site more efficiently and the potential to create a concern for adjacent residential is enhanced. So one of those discussions is not only how much of the bucket can now be built, but where it will go. Because in some cases you could have, with a transit-oriented development and what they're trying to accomplish there, you could have development that isn't necessarily traditionally buffering the adjacent residential. And that's kind of a squealy way to say that, but the site is more open to development, and key to that is making sure that you manage the impacts of height and setback and landscaping on adjacent residential properties.
Commissioner Carlson, please.
Mr. McCullough mentioned putting up maybe four new buildings on this 46-acre complex. I don't readily recall how many buildings they wanted to add 2.5 years ago. Do you?
That actually didn't come up as part of the conference plan amendment in 2014.
Okay. They wanted, it was vague.
Okay. Right.
Was,
all right.
I just want to increase square footage and, I think, density.
Okay. Back to you.
Okay, thanks. So,
Mr. Matz.
So, check. I got to tell my kid that. Call me Mr. Matz. only when he wants the car. So that's the first box we want to check with you to make sure that we've introduced the application to you with sufficient understanding about what it is that's being proposed. It's policy amendments and policy proposals to point at site development implementation through regulation. And again, that's what they're doing. They're not asking to change the zoning. They're asking to set a framework that could consider things that are happening in other areas in nearby while addressing that very close relationship between how much development's on the site, the meadow, the trees, and traffic impacts.
Mr. Chair, I'm so sorry, Mr. Mass. Or Mr. Nicholas.
That's okay, Ms. Hildhorst.
Yes. One question, I'm sorry I didn't ask. Since the PUD was put in place in 72-73,
yes,
how many times has it been challenged or a request been made to change the comp plan to, like, what we're going through?
You know, I'm gonna dig that one up for you.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'd be curious.
Okay.
If it's just this is more related to the growing Bellevue in the last decade, or has this just kind of always gone? And I'm sure there's people in the room that could tell me the answer, but wondering.
We'll give you a timeline of actions and essentially that. So both, you'll get a sense of how it was built out and then, as you mentioned, how it's been challenged or looked at over time. So that's a great one. Okay. Thank you. Okay, so the second thing that we want to do is we want to look at the question of expansion of the geographic scope. And as you'll recall, that is one of the decision criteria. I'll just cut right to the chase. We're recommending that you not consider expansion of the geographic scope of this proposal. And let's see if my thing works. So the site in the middle there is, it's sort of an arc of office. Let's see if I can get that to show up there. There it is. The arc of office zone development that essentially curves around from the north. And you recall Dr. Nafisi's parcels up there, right at the end of the mm-hmm. start of the arrow. So that's all office up there in that little triangle, office coming down to 24th, the BTC site, and then sort of heading west on 20th there, all that. And that was in place as the Crossroads plan, seeing that as sort of a buffer from what was already considered to be higher levels of intensity development in Redmond, the city boundaries, the dashed line, and then, of course, the Bell Red area, which is the purple there in the middle. There are similarly situated properties in that they're all zoned office there, but for us, the thing we're going to do and the thing we'll build into the staff recommendation is that none of these other sites have the size of BTC, so they can't take advantage of a focus on a TOD type of development. In other words, they're simply not big enough. And Dr. Napsey ran into this problem too. He was looking for to take advantage of levels of intensity development that couldn't be realized on small properties. And so what we're telling you is north of Bell Red and west of 20th is there's these other office zone properties lack that similarly situated circumstance to be able to take advantage of the framework that KBS is proposing for the New Guard site. So we're suggesting to you that you not expand the geographic scope of the site beyond the current boundaries.
And was that the same recommendation last time, if you remember, Nicholas?
No. I think 3 years ago there was a recommendation to expand the geographic scope. There was a property across the street that wanted to.
Except I don't know where we would have taken it. So I apologize. I will have to check that out, too, and give you the language of what we did. I don't think
maybe
that we
it was
did,
just at the same time that I'm remembering it. I don't
know. Yeah. It might have been the NAFISI application because we did suggest that you look at the entire triangle, but we'll track it down.
Thank you.
I have a question, Mr. Please, Chair. Yeah. So I just want to be clear. What you're saying is the other properties closer to where the station is going to be, the rail station is going to be, many of them are not large properties but small properties, so they can't really take advantage of the same type of TOD.
Right, the other properties, which is this office swath of stuff, which is the triangle up to the north, the properties directly north, and then this band of office that the arrow is pointing at that sort of runs west along 20th, is they are similarly situated in that they're office-owned property, but the size of those parcels, they couldn't take advantage of the development intensities that are being realized in TOD development now in Bel-Red and in the other areas.
So
only the KBS site can take advantage of the proposal they're making. So it would be ineffective for us to suggest that we look at this larger question because they couldn't take advantage of it. Yes, people could assemble parcels. In fact, I had someone call me today about, well, what about if we did that? But that's kind of cart before the horse stuff for us in
okay.
terms of being able to say that. Rather, it might, one of the legitimate concerns is that you could have the KBS application advance, and then people would say, oh, well, we want to try that now. But I also think that's entirely appropriate in this process to be able to say those things are changing.
So I guess, and this is going to be outside of your realm, I guess in the back of my head I'm wondering, why did Sound Transit put a light rail station in an area surrounded by parcels that could not build into the TOD density? I mean, what was the logic of putting the station there?
That Overlake Transit Center site is in an area that's expected to have TOD densities. It's already there. These are not in that area. Yes,
okay.
There's going to be conversation about the walk shed, but they put the transit center location in an area already expected to densify.
Okay.
This isn't that case with
okay.
these similarly situated office properties that are outside
okay.
In Bellevue, but outside of the urban center and outside of the Bel-Red sub-area.
Okay.
That's us is the difference.
Okay.
Just a quick follow-on on the transportation, Nicholas.
Yeah.
What is typically the process? Do we do the analysis before we present the case for threshold review? Or do we? What is typically the process that is followed?
Typically, and we hope you'll let us do this, typically transportation impacts are analyzed under our State Environmental Policy Act framework. In other words, potential impacts to the environment of land use, transportation, air quality. So for us, typically what we do is if a proposal advances into the work program of all of these potential amendments is what can actually change the comprehensive plan, and so thus is subject to SEPA analysis. Threshold review, we're still trying to set up a docket, so we typically don't do the kind of transportation modeling that we would do once it's gone live, in other words. And so we need to understand, because it could actually amend the plan, we need to understand what the potential impacts of that. But with threshold review, we're still thinking about whether or not we should be considering these. So typically we wait to do our modeling efforts with SEPA, and SEPA is applied to the actual decision that you would make on that. And we will do that at a planning study level. Right now we're waiting for the model, which is called the BKR model, the Bellevue-Kirkland Road model. We're waiting for that to be updated. And so the timing of that will work out very much so for final review. That's typically how we process that aspect of it.
Thank you. The reason I ask is just, I guess, more on a personal note. I have two children who go to Interlake High School. And if I try to drop them in the morning to school, it's a pretty tedious activity, I can tell you that. And so I want to just express my strong support for the analysis of transportation.
Understood. We will spend more modeling time than usual on this if it goes to final review.
Chair Davidos, just because I can access past records pretty quick, March 5th, 2014, when this was brought to the Planning Commission, staff did not recommend any geographic expansion of the scope.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. So we'll wait to the end, but essentially I want to make sure I'm answering any questions about the geographic scope issue that we're asking you to address.
I have a question.
Please, yeah.
North of the site, I know we're right at the border between Bellevue and Redmond. So what's happening north of that site? Because I think in the corner of between Bel-Red and, is that 24th? Is it an aging facility that's there now across the street from a gas station? And then further north of that, what's happening? Any changes?
Right.
Yeah. like that.
Okay. All right, I just saw something there. Okay. All right, so Commissioner Moore, so you're talking about this area here. This is where the senior center is. This is still Bellevue, so the border between Bellevue and Redmond is this. This is the Redmond's group health process. This is the urban center up there at Microsoft. This is the easternmost foot of the Bellred subarea. This is the retirement or the short-term therapy retirement center up here. This is Dr. Napsy's dental office. This is an extended homestay hotel. This is there's an office building right here. It's a four-story office building, and then there's a telecommunications facility at this location right here. This is the LIV.
Right.
Right here, and actually the LIV is right here. This is the Trader Joe's area here. This is the new project that's being built here. This office zoning here, this is the Lutherans?
Yeah, I think so.
Church there?
Yeah.
Yeah. This is a row of small professional offices, dental offices. There's a bank there, things like that. And then as you work your way down, you get a mix of office buildings and some retirement facilities through here. And then this is actually Highland Middle School right here. And there's some new housing that's been built behind it here. And then this is that small band of, this is the Jack in the Box pizza. And then there's some other small retail businesses and stuff through here in this area here of the and with CB zoning and office zoning here. And then there's another church right here.
So let me clarify my question. So besides what's happening on the northwest corner with where the group health used to be, any expected zoning changes on the northeast corner?
In Redmond or
in Redmond Baltimore? That we may know of? Because this is a border, but we should take that into consideration.
So we I don't think so. We'll check that out. We'll make sure that we understand because their urban center has been set for some time, and so there's development capacity. I don't know that they're changing.
Because it's
that.
So close enough to the site, if we're considering a geographic scope, we should take that into account.
Except we can't go into Redmond.
Right, but we may know what's happening in Redmond.
Okay, all right. We'll take a look. I'll have to get information back to you in order to do that.
So, Nicholas, we're about two-thirds of the way into the agenda, so...
Yes, I'm about to wrap up.
Thank you.
So, we also have included in your packets the threshold review decision criteria. You're all familiar with those. We'll be basing our recommendation on those. We'll also... And I've included those on page 3 with a brief discussion of the purpose of threshold review. Happy to entertain any questions in regard to that. Also, just wanted to very briefly address page 4, where we talk about using final review to address merit-based issues. That's, again, the idea that we're setting up the cases we're going to consider, and then we're going to deep dive into them at final review and do the merit-based thing. You've heard before our conversation about a threshold review to decide what you're going to look at, and final review is how you're going to look at it. So, again, having that relationship and having people able to engage in that regard. Very briefly, I also want to touch on that community engagement has been early and robust. We've had early outreach to the previous parties of record for 2014. We're responding in writing to each of the public comments that submitted. We've expanded the website to put a lot of information out there. We have put ourselves out, invite us to invite you by planning and community development staff, both with our neighbor liaison staff and our planning staff, to attend neighborhood and community association meetings. We've had 3 of those. That also helps us talk about the whole comp plan process, rather than just talk about BTC, but to talk about the comp plan process and help people understand how this, as Terry's pointed out to you previously, this significant policy document actually affects lives. We have a drop in office hours at Crossroads Mini City Hall kind of fun. But, you know, putting ourselves out, say, hey, if it doesn't work for you to come to meetings, we'll be out there. Come see us. And we've also we also put notice in the weekly permit bulletin. I would clarify for you that the numbers on page 4 are a little outdated. We've had 58 comments that have been submitted and 4 more this afternoon. I'll be sure to get those to you, so 62. And we've had 67 people request to be parties of record. So with that, I'd ask you to give me direction about the geographic scoping and to set the hearing date of June 14th, and I would be done.
Thank you very much. I do want to acknowledge the outreach. I think it's been a good amount of work and time on the part of you and the staff team, and I believe you're a very popular man, Mr. Metz.
Now. Yeah, and I think it's been really helpful because it gives people that opportunity to engage and to understand and not feel they have to, you know, present to you or to make a case, but to be able to understand things. And I know I forgot to mention, the applicant has hosted a meeting too. KBS hosted a meeting last week. And then giving people opportunities to ask questions and find out things and discover things where they don't feel they have to be testifying immediately. That's really enriched our ability to bring information to you and to look at that in a more coherent fashion.
Thank you. If I could just, I know there are many folks in the audience. I think there was a gentleman who said this is the first Planning Commission meeting. Just to give a quick summary of where we are, the threshold review is the first step in Bellevue's two-step process. We will have, I guess assuming we vote on it, there will be a public hearing for the threshold review, and we have a view in terms of the date. What we're doing this evening is to take in staff's recommendation on not expanding the geographic scope for this particular EPA. And whether we would approve, support the staff recommendation or not, and also decide on the date for the threshold public hearing. Is that a fair summary, Mr. Cullen?
That is a fair summary.
So just want to be very clear in terms of where we are in the process of decision making. So it's just the first of two steps. So with that, I want to open up for the commissioners' questions, comments, feedback.
What do you think about geographic scope?
So I'll start. Go ahead, please.
Yeah. So I also want to applaud the outreach by both city and the and KBS. There's one point there are a couple of points that sort of stick with me with this, but there's one in particular, and that is a matter of consistency. In downtown, especially in downtown livability, we've been talking about providing a buffer and making sure that we provide that graceful transition from the urban development to the neighborhoods, and I feel like expanding the scope would actually go against that. So just because it's not downtown doesn't mean we don't need to respect that as well. So I'm in favor of supporting the recommendation of not expanding the geographic scope.
Thank you.
Yep.
Any other comments, questions? So if not, I want to just again reiterate the transportation study. So I know technically we will follow the process, but knowing firsthand pretty much the state of transportation in that particular part of Bellevue, I do want to express my strong concern that the analysis is something without which would be premature.
Right. So we will use a planning study. We will measure it against expected development in 2035. And we will look at some various scenarios around what we believe is the capacity of the site or office development, and we will measure that in what's called an average level of, not that level of service, but an average delay at intersections in this area. And we will treat this development as new growth in Bellevue. We're not moving it from somewhere else. And I know that's a key issue for us going forward, is that we're not going to change the PSRC pie because this growth is in the region already. We know that. But we believe that it's legitimate to say it's new growth that has not been anticipated before. And so we'll look at that, too, in terms of how that impacts intersections and the traffic network.
That's right. Thank you. I think Commissioner Carlson, you had a question, and then Commissioner Hillhorst.
Yeah, again, I just wanted to get clear on this. Not going back 2.5 years and not going forward into what they're proposing now, as things currently exist, Mr. Matz, do they have additional capacity to grow their footprint?
As things exist, Commissioner Carlson, they do not.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'm in support of not expanding geographic scope. I think it'll just muddy the waters. I think this is a unique parcel. So that would be where I would go, just so we can focus on this, and the public hearing can just be focused on this property and not everyone else around it. I think that will be easier for everyone. But I would like to follow up. I think Commissioner Morisseau's points were very good, that there is building occurring that is maybe not in the city of Bellevue, but across the line in Redmond, that will impact this same community. So even though we can't expand into Redmond, I would very specifically like that we get that data at the next presentation, because I think it's a really good point to keep in consideration.
So what I had anticipated was giving you actual numbers, both capacity and what's happening on the ground there. We'll work with Redmond to get that information. But because we use a model that looks at Bellevue, Kirkland, and Redmond, we will be able to anticipate traffic impacts of development in other areas, including Redmond. So we'll understand what the traffic impact of all of the development is having on the transportation network. And that boundary, the boundary between Bellevue and Redmond doesn't exist in that regard.
Okay.
So we'll be able, so it'll be a two-parter. We'll give you the square footage, and we'll give you, as we do it in the model, provided that we have that happen at final review.
So reading on page 2 what should be considered for expanding a geographic scope is the need for similarly situated properties. And being familiar with that area within Bellevue,
mm-hmm.
I don't see that. I think this property is unique enough that this should be limited to this site. So I don't have any issue with restricting the geographic scope to only this site at this point. That being said, I still would like to see that data that we talked about earlier.
Of course, absolutely.
Any other questions? So, lacking none, I think.
A motion?
Yeah. I would solicit a motion.
You know, I understand the company's, you know, perspective on this, that you've got 46 acres and 350,000 feet. That looks like a relatively small amount of space given what you have. The issue is where it is. And part of the deal was basically you've got a company within a park. I mean, you're locating here because this area is a buffer. And it's on, you know, the east side of 156. So I would have to add my voice on the issue of not expanding geographic scope.
Thank you. So I think there is more or less agreement across the commission.
Okay.
Expanded,
so with that said, I'd like to pass a motion not to expand the geographic site for the Bellevue Technology Center.
I'll second.
Second. All in favor, say aye.
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 So we do agree with the staff. The motion passes.
Great. So we will leave the notification as it currently exists.
So we'll constrain it to this particular property?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Do you want us to also, is there a need for us to have a date for the public hearing right at this session?
Yep.
So that's the next, so I believe you're proposing June 14th,
that's
is that
correct.
Right? For the threshold review public hearing. Any questions, comments on that? So I think we're in agreement in terms of
all right.
Dates.
Thank you very much for the time tonight. I appreciate your patience, and thank we'll you. Be back to you on June 14th.
Sure, Davides. Just a few closing notes on it. Schedule-wise, this is the first of three meetings that you're having that are being dedicated to this particular topic. Tonight, introducing it, the plan amendment, June 14th, the public hearing, and June 28th is a study session to make a recommendation to City Council about if this should be in the work program or not. And City Council's tentatively identified for July the 24th, not for a final decision, but for a decision as to whether or not it should be in this year's plan amendment cycle. And on a different note, but related to this, I just want there were 57 comments that were given to us over time by the neighborhoods and interested parties, and that was sent out to the Planning Commission today. They got both a paper and digital copy of that. So I'd like people to know that those remarks are being forwarded to the Planning Commission.
Mr. Collin, I have a quick question. So because of the volume of mail that we've gotten, the volume of speakers, just for the public's knowledge, can any of that be entered as part of the public hearing, or does everyone have to resend their emails during public hearing portion, speak again at public hearing? Just asking if just so the public knows that do they just repeat and then it's included in public hearing, or can any of this be included already?
Submitted as part of the record?
That's a good question, Commissioner. They are part of the record, so the
right.
And we insist that comments be made in writing as much as I like to talk on the phone. But so we comments that are in writing to us by mail or by email or however they come to us, they become part of that record, and that forms part of the basis of the material you use to reach your decision. And we're going to spend a little time parsing these out because there's so much of it. We want to pull out some themes for you to do that. But yes, this you don't have to send again, but obviously testimony available to people. But the information that's part of the record is now part of that record and will be carried forward all the way through to council decisions.
Okay.
Thank you.
Great.
Just to then quickly summarize, so June 14th is the date for the public hearing for threshold review. June 28th is when the commission will deliberate. We'll study and then make a decision as to whether to go to council, and then obviously we go from there, right?
Correct. So by June the 28th, that is kind of a hard stop because council needs to hear it in July.
Very good.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you all.
Much. Thank you.
Take a break.
Yes, let's do that. Quick coffee bio break.
Yes.
We have a few moments. Did you want to take a short break?
Yeah, let's see.
Okay. You want to let them know and I'll silence the mics.
Just taking a quick coffee bio break for 5 minutes. We'll be back in 5 minutes. Thank you.
pretty proud too.
Yeah.
Right, folks, so we are back again.
That was huge.
Thank you. Thank you. So we are back to our regular topic, which is livability. So I'll give it to you, Mr. Cullen. Perhaps you could maybe set up some context for us and then take it from there.
Yes, thank you, Chair Davidos. We're on to the next study session, which is downtown livability. It's the continued review of the draft downtown land use code amendments. A public hearing was held by the Planning Commission on March the 8th, and you have had study sessions on March 22nd, April 19th, and this is your third study session post-Planning Commission public hearing. All right, general order business described is staff's going to present to follow up on the issues and the requests from the information that you had made from the last meeting, which was on April 19th. And then it's the chair's prerogative. He may go around the table and ask commissioners to state issues that are still outstanding to the commissioners, what's most important to them, potential solutions and ideas they may have to move the quote-unquote rock. And then back to staff, who's going to continue to present information for the scheduled review timetable, and then coming back to Planning Commission and staff having a joint discussion on where there may be differences, potential resolution, and the anticipated outcome is this further direction to staff will continue to move this set of code amendments forward towards some final recommendation scheduled on or before, I believe it's May 24th, which is your last meeting in May.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Over to you, Mr.
King. So thanks again for having us here, Chair Davidos and members of the Planning Commission. I'll give a very brief review of the follow-up that we've done since the last meeting. I'd like to direct you to page 70 of your printed packet. On that page, you'll see that we've been diligently tracking your precise direction that we've been receiving at the last couple Planning Commission meetings. So the way we've set this up is by topical.
That's fair.
Sure.
She was waving, and I thought she couldn't hear, so I wanted. It's okay.
So for the record, in the middle we have Emil King, and I'm the strategic planning manager in the city's Department of Planning and Community Development.
And I'm Patricia Byers, and I'm the co-development manager from DSD.
And I'm Carol Helland. I'm the land use director for the department. Development Services Department.
Thank you. Sorry for
being here. No problem. Thank you.
Thank you.
So on page 70, we've been tracking your specific direction. We have it organized by topical area, by the exact date that you gave us the direction, and then the status column is important because that's essentially what we've done with the direction. And in most all cases, we are essentially either have follow-up to do or we're going to be incorporating it into what we're calling the consolidated code draft that will be coming back to you for May the 10th. So if for any reason you see anything that is not precisely what you gave us direction on, I'd be encourage you to let us know because this is the way we're tracking the direction, initial direction that we're getting from you on all these topical areas.
Thank you very much. Just another one. I want to echo Emil's comment in terms of tracking and obviously making sure that we review individually in terms of our feedback. I believe you were thinking perhaps on the 10th of May we would do a holistic review as well of all of those changes, right?
Yeah, I think the way that the staff team here as well as Mr. Cullen have been representing your direction is its initial direction on all of the elements that basically the issues that you heard during the public comment of the draft code as well as other ideas that you have for us. So you will have the chance in the May 10th packet to kind of see all of that incorporated back into the 140 or so odd page document. So you can do a final holistic review as you form your recommendation for the Bellevue City Council.
Very good. So thank you. So we will have the time
and
the opportunity to come back and obviously make.
I think we heard feedback that you did not want a new 140-page document every week to look through. So
thank
that's
you.
Not what we're doing.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Commissioner Morris, please.
I do have a comment to Emil's point on parking flexibility on page 71. Dated 4/19, it says to remove the 20% shared parking reduction. It says language included in 4/26 packet for commission consideration. My recollection is that when it was brought up at the last commission meeting that we had decided not to move forward, that we would wait for the parking study. Yet I see it on here. So can you...
So we did have some internal staff conversation, and we weren't exactly certain on that one, whether there was a definitive direction to move forward in removing that 20%, or if you had essentially said, we're not going to do anything until the parking study is done. So we provided you this language, but it being initial direction, you may look at it, and if you don't want it to be included in the consolidated code, we don't have to.
Thank you. Perhaps if I could, I think you're right, Commissioner Morrison.
Yeah.
We had the discussion.
Yeah.
There was, I think, across the commission, a perspective that we should defer until we had done the analysis, the parking analysis, to make any reasonable recommendations. There was also, I think, an opinion that there was a loophole to be fixed. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the one where we have here.
Mm-hmm.
I'd request perhaps we highlight both of those, that there is a perspective that we should just defer until we do the analysis and do the homework, and also call this out. So obviously, we'll give the commissioners time to think through and certainly close on the maintenance.
Okay.
Is that okay with you?
Okay.
That's one that we did have in the spirit of additional information, and if you'd like us to discuss it more, we did have essentially four things included in the commission's packet for tonight. So when you're ready, if you feel like doing your query of commissioners first, we would be in line afterwards. But we do have the four items on the screen that we do have information in the packet.
Yeah.
And if you'd like to have a more thorough discussion on those, concise but hitting the issues, would be the parking flexibility and both what was called the 20% loophole, as well as flexibility for all uses.
Yeah.
The definition of active uses, we did get direction from you to bring back a new definition, so we've done that. We've gotten at least the feedback that was specific to it was supportive of the changes that we made to it, but we would like your confirmation that that's something that the full commission is comfortable with. We have a bit of information on the maximum non-residential or office floor plates in the OLB, and there's also been correspondence from PMF as well as Wallace Properties that they dropped off for you as well. So there's been some additional dialogue on the floor plates in the OLB. And then we have some code clarifications that we've had in a couple packets. They're not minor, they're not major things, but they would be things that we've just incorporated into the consolidated draft.
Thank you.
So that concludes our follow-up from the last meeting.
Quickly, if I may just one
comment to you. Absolutely.
On the parking, just so for the record, and I had said this last time as well, certainly my opinion is that we should defer making any decisions until we do the analysis, until we have the output of that one. But I want to just express my opinion, and certainly we'll come back, and you know, by the time we get to the 10th, I think we'll close in terms of where we are. What do you?
Then maybe my question is more for you. So I agree. We had said let's not make any... Don't take away any parking or change any parking as what is today till we had more data. But I think there was a desire to talk about that loophole and maybe get better wording around it or a better understanding of why there's a 20% for shared, but then there's not the same for other parking, that it just didn't make sense.
Yes.
Are you saying defer that discussion with the parking, or can that discussion still happen at a later date?
So I would suggest that if we can articulate that around this particular issue, and we get to clarity, absolutely, let's go for it. If you want to take a view, please go for it. If you want to restate in terms of what is the existing loophole and what is the
problem you want to solve. I know Commissioner Walters, this was her thing.
That's right.
So I'm wondering if we can defer till she's back.
And that was my point, saying let's keep them on the table.
I mean, I'm aware of the issue too, but I just don't necessarily want to have the conversation without her.
I would concur. And that was my proposal around.
Okay.
And having this on the table until we have commissioners present and we can come back. And then,
so we can just include that in the May 3rd packet materials.
Yeah.
And if you would like to come back to it at that time, we with Commissioner Walters here, we can attend to that. And that will be the decision point to let us know whether there are any changes that you want included in the consolidated draft.
Yeah.
It will be available on May 10th.
And if I recollect, I think Commissioner Carlson also had a point of view on this particular issue.
Okay.
So we'll do that one.
Well, we can get to that first on next week.
Thank you.
Okay. So our initial direction, I guess, as it stands tonight, is bring this back for May 3rd when Commissioner Walters here and you guys can discuss both the 20% so-called reduction loophole and if you were to make any changes regarding flexibility in this.
That would be the only one, and then we would defer
everything
to the analysis and then the follow-up post the analysis for other recommendations. Thank you.
May I, John?
Please.
So when you come back on May 3rd, can you provide a short, brief context of what that loophole is?
Yes.
Thank you.
We also, we attempted to write up some, we're calling potential implications regarding the removing the loophole.
Mm-hmm.
So unintended consequences, implications that we did get some feedback from stakeholders that they wanted a little bit more information on those and flesh those out a bit more. So we'll also have more time to flesh out those potential implications of removing or modifying the 20% number.
I do also just want to note, so we're clear about expectations, our packet needs to go out tomorrow. So what we'll probably do is augment some of the slides that we have for the discussion for parking for next week.
That's
so that
fine.
It won't, please don't be surprised if it doesn't any additional information doesn't appear in the written material.
Okay. I'll just see you on the Friday before the meeting.
Back to you. Thank you.
Okay. Would you like us to continue on with the review of the different attachment materials, Chair Davidos? We have information on active uses and...
Yeah, before we go there, perhaps just a quick... good point. Thank you.
Yep.
If I could just pause, maybe questions, comments in terms of this particular table. And also would like to take a few minutes to go around the commission if there are any outstanding items that you want to surface up. But please go ahead. You had a question, I think. Yes.
Sure. So around the amenities, I know you said at the bonus or super bonus amenities, we haven't really given you any feedback on what to include under there. But I know we've had initial discussions. It could be a fire station, aquatic center. It could be a few other things. So do we have possibility to have a conversation down the road on that if we get something with more meat that maybe makes more sense? Because some of the ideas I had apparently don't make sense, I've been told. So that was my first question. And then the second is the amenities list. Did I understand you the last meeting you said that we were not going to do the amenities because you were told by the development community they don't want the amenity system?
No, I could let me clarify those 2 points, if I may. So at our most recent meeting, we did have a review of some suggested changes throughout the amenity system section of the mm-hmm. code. And before we got into detail on those specific changes, I wanted to highlight two things that had come up during the public comment period just to make sure that this commission was aware of them and also ask for direction if we should pursue any more work on them. The first one was the concept of a super bonus was what it was referred to in the Bellevue Downtown Association letter. And in essence, that would allow a super bonus to be used that would take you above and beyond the maximum heights and maximum FARs in our dimensional table as stated. So the one that we've been working on for a number of months, the notion was being able to go above that with FAR and height. The direction that we noted from the commission just at your last meeting was you were not directing us to further explore that. So we are not doing any more work right now on a super bonus to allow someone to go above the proposed heights and FARs in the density and dimensional table.
The maximum.
The maximums.
density in that area.
Yeah.
Right. And I guess from the super bonus discussion, it was, I remember a conversation a long time ago, and the title super bonus was more vague, like, oh, well, that could be included, that could be included.
Yeah.
So I guess it wasn't clear you were looking for a list from us.
I think if I could maybe suggest one related item that you might be referring to is the idea of a flexible amenity.
Uh-huh.
So that is the notion of we have base FARs and base heights that are lower than the max FAR and max height, and to go from those base FARs and base heights to the maximum, the way the system is, you pick from the amenities with some rules and how things are picked and how many you can use. Number 18 on the list is the flexible amenity. So if something is not listed as number 1 through number 17, a developer would have the choice of going through a legislative departure, so with our Bellevue City Council, to do something that could fall into the category of some of the things that you've stated, they've also, the suggestion is some of those are fairly large ticket items is how I'd kind of refer to them. So the flexible amenity is in the code. It is meant to catch things that aren't in number 1 through 17, but is, I encourage you to think of it different than the super bonus, because that's a different
that's
idea.
That's a good clarification.
Yes.
Do we have the list of amenities handy that you could throw them in the packet so we have them for next meeting? That would be awesome.
I thought it was a whole table.
So, Commissioner Hillhorst, I've been informed that we're actually making good pace in terms of time. So we're actually on track or maybe even a little bit ahead of track in terms of schedule. So if there is a follow-on question or if you would like to make a request to staff to come back in terms of your particular topic of interest, I certainly would encourage you to make the request, and then perhaps we could deep dive into this topic at the next session.
Sure. Well, I feel that the ball's in our court, that we need to suggest some ideas if we do. I mean, if we want to pursue super bonus, we may not. But if you want us to, we've got to give you some ideas of what we're thinking to pursue. And then really I just wanted to look at the amenities and just make sure we refresh ourselves on the amenities and who's getting what, and is that amenities list, based on everything we've heard, do we feel it's complete so we can lock that down? I just want to lock that down. So that's my request.
Very good. Thank you.
Okay. Is that, would you like to consider that a follow-up item for the 3rd, is to May 3rd to reprint the amenity list? And There were a number of suggested new amenities that the community brought up to add to the list. With the one caveat I would say is most amenity systems are most effective if they focus on a smaller rather than exhaustive series of things. So there's the trade-off between flexibility to have everything able to be bonus versus the things that the city truly wants to focus. But if you'd like, we can reprint the list of 18 amenities with the bonus ratios, along with the ideas that people brought up for new amenities, if that would satisfy your need.
I think that would be good for us to just finish that.
Okay. And you
because
did,
there have been more suggestions, and I don't think they were included in the initial list. So that would, I would feel better that we could close that one down.
Thank you.
And you, Chair Hillhorst, you did mention the idea of eliminating the system as well. So that is something that did come up in a handful of public comments.
Mm-hmm.
And the summary of that is that people felt like the incentive system was becoming a bit complex and hard to really understand what we were going to be getting out of it, and suggested that one approach would be to both eliminate the amenity incentive system, but at the same time add on a set of new development requirements that would need to come into play. And people suggested that some things that in their minds they would add would be outdoor plaza, enhanced streetscape, active recreation area, enclosed plaza, public art, water features, and pet areas. Mm-hmm. So That was another one that we asked you at the last meeting. Would you like any more background information on how that would work out? And the direction we got was no, you're keeping the current incentive system is something you wanted to continue to refine. And so we're not doing any more work on that at this point, provided that was your initial direction, and we're here to do the necessary follow-up work that you want us to do.
Yeah. No, I mean, just like I said, there's been suggestions. We should look at the list. Whether or not the list comes out of this, I don't know yet. But, you know, listening to the public saying we were supposed to get all these amenities and we're not, I kind of want to respect that and have another look at it.
Okay.
And I just think we need to do that.
What will it won't end up in the packet, but we've also had some public comments about having some sample projects that might occur in the future, just the scale of development and what those would generally deliver through the proposed incentive system, so somebody can see, you know, a prototypical 200 or 300 unit apartment or condo or office building, and what the amenity would be as all the other metrics come into play in the incentive system based on your current recommendation. So we could have that ready for the meeting, but not in the packet that we need to get out tomorrow or Friday.
The information we can put in the packet is there was information that from April 19th that discussed the topic of amenities and went through the compilation of the public comments that we have received. So that would probably be helpful, and that will allow the reprinting of that amenity chart that you're looking at there.
Okay.
And then we can add, so that won't require additional work. I think some of the things that we will also be discussing on May 3rd will include the tower separation issue. And last week also the Planning Commission provided direction to include the removal of the 10% open space, which I think based on the comments from this evening, most of the comments that were not necessarily directly focused on the amenities, but were focused on tower separation and setback and that 10% open space requirement for exceeding the height limit and exceeding the old max FAR.
Mm-hmm.
So those topics could be easily related and discussed again together on May 3rd.
Makes sense. Just for the record, I do... From my perspective, I would certainly recommend the elimination of the incentive system. I believe it's complicated. I believe it leads to a variety of side effects. But I believe I'm also in the minority here. So I just want to express my opinion, just for the record. Now, unless there is a strong desire across the commission to pursue that, which I don't believe is the case.
What we heard last time was that was the when we went through each of the topics, the super bonus and the elimination of the amenity system didn't advance additional work.
So I'm in the minority on that one. So.
Okay.
I'll just I will echo Chair Davis' point and the point of a lot of the stakeholders is that not only is it complicated, but it's just sort of like what are we trying to get at? And I think like one of the big thing is the amenity system as we're talking about it now. As it's been sort of, I recognize that it has expanded actually through the CAC's work, but really the bottom line is it's aimed at providing open space. And so if the amenity system, if what we're really trying to get for developers and project owners or property owners to provide is more open space, or we want to see more open space in downtown Bellevue, it may be a good thing, and having that sort of like 10% FAR that they can earn by providing more ground level open space, and certainly there's the whole PED corridor thing. Fair enough. But I think one of the things the commission should be mindful of is we've already gone and recommended, and these were kind of early wins, like significant changes to the sidewalk and landscaping, and so we've got some wider, nicer looking sidewalks. Which is really providing kind of that streetscape feel as well. And one of the other things that we recommended maybe two meetings ago was looking at creating sort of like a park fund, if you will, or an open space fund, like through the fee and lieu program. And so I still see a value if we're going to have this 10% delta, if you will, between your base FAR and your maximum achievable FAR of having something that earns your way up. And I do like the idea of open space being there. But I think there's a whole lot of other stuff, and this goes to Chair Davidoff's point, I think, which is there's a whole lot of things in there that they never get used. It makes it sort of, maybe it doesn't hurt anything other than it's killing more trees and more packet space or whatever when we print it, but there is a less is more sort of thing if we can just focus in on what it is that we'd like to see to make downtown more livable and then really incentivize that and cut through the rest of it. So.
Thank you, Commissioner Link. Commissioner Brooks, too.
I'm just going to make a quick plug for something I've mentioned before, and I don't necessarily know how this would be implemented, but I think it's a great, I think we should try it, and that's making it more lean, making the process more lean around our amenity incentive system. So
you would be in support of pursuing simplicity there?
Pursuing simplicity, not getting rid of it, but making it more lean. I proposed this back when we had the joint meeting with City Council, and we had talked about it a little bit. But
okay. Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm fine with lean and simple, too. I mean, it doesn't have to be everything we have today. Let's just maybe we cut some stuff out, what makes sense. For the open space, I mean, maybe instead of just generic open space, maybe it gives us some ideas of some specificity of what that open space is going to do versus just open space. And maybe that's what contributes to livability, right? So, and then, Commissioner Lang, you're saying you're for the keeping the 10% height increase?
No.
Open space?
That's a different thing. What I'm saying is if we, in the current sort of iteration of the packet, we've basically recalibrated the base FAR is 90% of the max FAR.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is if we don't have some way to earn that 10% to your max, then it doesn't work. By default, like if there's no amenity system, there's nothing to earn your way up. So I'm saying, assuming that we want to keep an amenity system and have that 10% gap to try to earn your way to, it seems like consistently going back literally now 4 years to the CAC, the big thing that we've heard over and over and over is what do we do to get to promote more open space in downtown? So I'm saying I agree with Chair Davidoff that it would be nice to have a simpler, cleaner, focused system. And if we were to go toward that, what I would suggest is that those remaining amenities really just be focused on providing that open space and possibly looking at, whether it be like a park impact fee or something that's only for downtown or something along those lines.
Yeah, and that was what I was wondering is, do we maybe look at a park impact fee or component so it's not maybe just piece-parted open spaces, but it goes into a cohesive park plan that can be designed and purchased? So, maybe that's something we don't have listed that we could list to gather open space, but there's more of a process around that open space for everyone to enjoy. So,
I just want to work to place, yeah. When I say lean, I don't necessarily, I do mean simple as well, but when I say lean, I'm talking about a menu of amenities that are constantly updated based on the evidence, like based on what we're seeing in terms of development throughout the city or downtown.
Thank you. So,
may
Mr.
I?
King, please, yes, sorry.
Well, I'm going to reiterate something that I've said before. If we do end up having an amenity incentive system, we need something that actually works, that is effective, that benefits the residents, the city, and the developers. And thinking of the timeline that we considering to put in place now for the review of the system, the 7 to 10 years, I think that's too long of a timeline to determine whether what we have in place is actually working. So I would open a discussion with the commission. Should we consider reducing that timeline if we do decide to have an amenity incentive system?
Thank you, Commissioner Morris.
So the lean part gets it, is exactly what you're talking about.
It'll be like the 5-year Bell Red look back, right?
But I think you're proposing a much shorter time frame in terms of, right. of would you have a point of view in terms of what you think is the window of time?
Well, I would rely on staff based on other cities and their amenity systems. How long is that period for them and what what makes sense. I could say 5 to 7 years, but I don't really have anything to back that up. I think it has to do, we have to look at the economics of the time. I think there's a lot of factors that come into play.
Why don't I suggest we'll outline some of those factors to consider, and we can talk about it on May 3rd.
Thank
along
you.
With the rest of the incentive
yeah.
system.
So I was wrong. Clearly there's more interest across the commission in terms of simplifying, so that's good. Thank you. So I'll give it back to you.
Okay.
I think you have some, unfortunately, giving you some more work on that front in terms of incentives.
Yeah, that's fine. So we...
Very quickly, I do want to spend just a couple of minutes across the commission. Any other big items, big ticket items, if you want to propose or want to get the closure? I'm seeing Commissioner Lang jumping in. Please, I'll give it to you.
All right. I want to apologize to my fellow commissioners for not being able to participate last week, because I know that obviously staff and as well as commission is working really hard to move this thing toward completion. I just want to kind of focus some comments on what I'll call like the rocks or big stones that are here in our packet tonight. I recognize that we want to maybe table the discussion on some of the parking things until Commissioner Walter returns. And so I can do that, but I definitely have some pretty strong feelings about some of the language here as needing to be. It's a good start, but it's got a little bit of a little ways to go. And I'll leave it at that. On the active uses, I appreciate the effort that's been made, and it really is good because it ties into the existing code and all the rest of that. Leave comments there. My big stone, whatever, that I didn't get to during my lengthy soliloquy about a month ago is really goes to the height issues. And I understand that the commission made a recommendation last meeting to remove the open space requirement tied to what I'll call the trigger height. And my recommendation is that we get rid of the trigger height concept altogether. One, because we've gotten rid of the open space thing required tied to it, but two, for something else. And this is not, this will be provocative, and don't worry, Mr. Bandit, I'm not going to go nuclear, but here's the issue, right? So when we were at the CAC and we talked about having like increasing some of the heights, you know, like the core going to 600 feet, the mixed use to 300 or 400 feet. When we were talking about those things, it was always in the context of like a new sort of like an urban design form, like the, we'll call it the Vancouver, Canada, like tall slender mm-hmm. towers, okay? But here's the problem with where we are with this in the code as it's being proposed, all right? So what we told or what we talked about, and it really was at the very end of the CAC process, was this idea that you could have a 400-foot building like this under the existing code, or you could have a 600-foot building like this, all right? And so the idea was, okay, it's taller, but from an air and light and space, it's a spire, and it's allowing actually more air and light and space in. But that's not actually what we have in our packet. That's not what we're looking at. What we're actually looking at, and I know the community knows this, is this, because of this trigger height thing. You still get to build to the existing height the same exact mass that you could before, and then you have to retreat the floor plates by 10% above it. So I did the math. 24,000 square foot floor plate, as an example. If you take the square root, so you assumed it's a square building, the square root of 24,000 is like 156. If you reduce 24,000 by 10%, that's 2,400 square feet, so 21,600 square feet. Well, the square root of 21,600 square feet is about 148.5. So you've reduced a 156-foot facade length by like 7.5 feet. It is an imperceptible difference, and now you have a 200-foot tall a building that's 200 feet taller that is not a tall, skinny building. A tall, skinny building is this. it's not this. And this is what our code, as it's currently, how it's currently drafted, if we have 600 feet or 400 feet or whatever, this is what you get. And so I have a problem with that because from an aesthetics standpoint, it's not what we talked about to the extent that we even talked about looking at 600 feet or 450 feet or whatever it is when we looked at these height increases. It's not what we talked about. And so let's look at some of the unintended consequences of what's happened as we've talked about like 600 feet or 400 feet or these big height increases in some of the zones. Well, the thing that fell from that was the tower spacing and the setbacks. And so this whole discussion, you know, and these very thoughtful presentations that we've heard, whether it's, you know, the Weber-Thompson stuff or the things from Mr. Locke or the things from my favorite land use attorney out there somewhere and all the rest of them, all of these efforts have been an effort to solve a problem that really, in a way, never was, because it's not what the existing code is. And so my sort of look at this is, if we're going to have a conversation about changing heights and having like a change in massing and a change in form of our downtown buildings, and we're going to say, we're going to allow you to build much taller, but you have to build skinnier, then it actually needs to be a skinnier building and not just the little portion of it that goes above the height, the old maximum height. And so my look at this is around in downtown Bellevue, from what we've talked about, and this goes back 4 years, there are really only about two or three places in downtown that we've actually, we as a CAC and we as a planning commission have actually talked about what I'm going to call upzoning, truly upzoning, like we are truly giving them height and density that is, it's different than what it is. One of them, and importantly, is the OLB. That's the face of our downtown, right along the freeway. And the CAC was never concerned about allowing heights like 300 feet or whatever along there. We basically said, take that downtown mixed use and run it across the street. So my comments aren't aimed at that. And my comments about this height stuff are not aimed at the 12th Avenue, the little, instead of having A1, we're going to have A3. It's not aimed at that. And it's not aimed at what the Fortin Group has sort of carefully kind of, you know, put together and explained over the years. What it's aimed at is this issue of, if we're talking about going from 450 to 600 feet in the core for the purpose of having an iconic skyline with tall, skinny buildings, then the code should actually reflect or require that we get an iconic skyline with tall, skinny buildings and imperceptibly skinny buildings. And I would take that same concept and apply it to the rest of them. And so I'm not going to do what I thought I was going to do tonight, which is just move to kill off all of the additional height. But if we don't have a proposal in front of us where literally we're skinnying up the buildings from the what I'll call the podium up, and I'd say the podium is like, you know, 80 or 100 feet or whatever was kind of looked in there, if we're not looking at something that truly changes the form, then I don't think that, I think that what's happening is we're getting all of the impact and none of, potentially or likely none of the benefit. So that's my big rock, and I appreciate the, you know, you guys letting me go on at length on that. The rest of this.
Sorry, Commissioner Lang, before you go on, so thank you for the clarity and obviously helping us visualize it. I do want to pause because it's a critical point that you're making, and I'd like to just make sure we have a chance to ask questions. No, it appears that you're reluctant to make a motion or even make a recommendation, but I want to just open it up, questions, thoughts, because I have a counter proposal.
I do too.
Go ahead.
So your graphics were very wonderful, so thank you for that.
I worked hard on them.
You did, you did. You brought props and everything.
Ferg and a few others.
So what I heard you kind of say at the end is, We need to either have a proposal in front of us to basically, instead of a 10% reduction, I don't know, for example, 50% reduction, right, to get the smaller, either something like that to review, or the other one is don't change the heights because we're just going to get taller, fatter buildings.
Yeah, we're just going to get the exact same mass. It'll just be taller.
So are you proposing then that we get that the next that we ask for more data to make that recommendation, or because you don't have the 50% floor plate example, do you want to just make the recommendation not do height?
So here's
I just want to know what the next step is.
And this is why I'm saying I'm not going to make I had thought coming tonight that I would literally move. I would bring a motion. I'd even kind of tried to word it out so that I wouldn't go on at length. Ha ha ha. But my I don't know. There's probably a dozen people or two dozen people in this room that know what a viable floor plate or a minimum viable floor plate, these types of things. That's not me. And so if I say, well, you know, what we really ought to do is we ought to make them reduce all of the floor plates by 30% from the podium up, I don't know if that means that those floor plates actually are not economically viable or they don't work for the use. I don't know that, and I don't want to push for something like that because I don't understand it. To me, like, what that ends up doing is, and I use the example of the tower separation and the setbacks, is we end up finding out, like, oh my gosh, like, that could be even, like, worse than whatever. So I'm not going to go there. I would prefer either to get more information, or if I heard from the rest of the commission that everybody's thinking, like, well, you know what? There was no recommendation by the CAC to actually increase heights just for the sake of sort of increasing heights throughout the downtown. So nobody wants to do that. If I heard that from my fellow commissioners, I'd say, okay, that's kind of where I was coming, you know, preparing for this meeting and actually preparing for the last meeting. But I also understand that what I do recall very well from the CAC's discussion and also hearing from stakeholders throughout this too is that there has been a desire to have flexibility in terms of that form. And part of the flexibility is taking that, you know, lump of clay, if you will, and stretching it and doing things with it, and maybe having the flexibility to have more height is there. I just feel very adamant that we cannot simply say you can have more height and you can essentially have this exact same mass. And when you tell me a 10% floor plate reduction, I can do the math on that, and it is an imperceptible difference from a bulk standpoint. So, yeah.
Thank you, Commissioner Lang. We missed you last time.
No, I'm
we
sure.
Really missed you last time. Commissioner Morris, I believe you had a question, yes?
Well, I think Michelle asked my question to some extent.
All right.
And I heard Commissioner Lang's response, so I'm good for now.
So I would like to then just see if we can get to closure here, whether we ask for follow-on data or analysis, or if you feel like this is something we want to provide in terms of direction.
So I think the material that we're going to bring back on May 3rd is actually going to be helpful for this discussion, but if you have more observations about tower separation and essentially floor plate, essentially the way the code was originally drafted, that went out in November and then got revisions until the public hearing, had several different standards that led to the solution that you're talking about. But many of those standards have over time been eliminated. So when you think about the operation above the trigger height of the 10% open space and the 80% tower separation and the 40% setback for the tower, it was intended to have the result that you're describing. Essentially, placing a floor plate limitation on it would be a different way to accomplish that result.
Well, and I appreciate that, Ms. Helen. The problem is, if you don't put the floor plate limitation, maybe all of these other sort of indirect ways mm-hmm. of trying to squeeze it in will get there, or maybe they won't.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want somebody to do something, tell them to do it. And if you don't want somebody to do something, tell them not to do it. You know, Otherwise, I get the call, and it's very lucrative. But it's
well,
I'm just kind of concerned. And the thing is, I know that there are stakeholders in here that have advocated for the flexibility of having increased heights, and I think there's probably stakeholders in here that thought up until about 10 minutes ago that it was sort of a foregone conclusion that there would be 600 feet in the central core and, you know, some of these things going forward. And I don't think that it's fair for me to spring something like this. But I can tell you that the code, and I would have gotten to this a month ago, but y'all wore me out, ha, ha, ha. This was my next item, by the way, that fateful night. But I'm really concerned because from a livability perspective, because that's what this has always been about, we've always talked about like shadows and mass and, you know, the view obstructions and all these types of things and like the impact on what it's like to be a worker and what it's like to be a resident and, you know, what it's like to be all here. And this code, as it's written, ensures that people that avail themselves of the height, the increased height, are going to be allowed to basically visit or have the same massing impacts. And it's incongruous to me with where we started 4 years ago.
So if I may, then I think it's I believe that the right thing to do is to then make sure we dedicate time at our next session to follow up. So I agree with you, Commissioner Lang. Perhaps at this point we should not jump to any particular conclusion. I think you raised a very critical question. So if we could table this, come back at the next session, please.
So we were intending to come back on May 3rd with additional information on
please.
The 60 versus 80 tower spacing. So we'll have information on that. And
yeah.
I guess in that same discussion and related to it about urban form, we'll have more information on at least what was the proposed 10% floor plate reduction, what that might look like in a built form, and then we'll explore more some of the facets that Commissioner Lang brought up about what a what-if scenario if it was a increased reduction in that.
That's
with
right.
The caveat that we need to also think about what are viable floor plates that could actually be built.
Yeah, thank you.
As well.
Just given the, I think, the way you framed the question, I would say let's maybe make this a separate, distinct item for discussion, so it doesn't get lost in the miasma. Commissioner Morrison.
I'm all for making informed decision, not just making a statement for the sake of making a statement. Could staff please come back with the information that Emil just mentioned, with some information with cities that have similar height to what we have, similar tower spacing to what we're considering, and that may end up with slender buildings and what their floor plates are. Because I think that could be useful to the discussion that we're going to have about this on May 3rd.
Thank you. Was there one more item, Commissioner Lang, on your list, or were you?
Well, can I say something about the parking just to provide
please,
me a comment?
Please, yes,
just because I want to move this thing forward.
Of course, yes.
So I appreciate the revisions that have been prepared. And I guess one of the things, and I spoke with Mr. King about this briefly before I came in or joined the meeting this evening, but and this goes to, I guess, it's the attachment one stuff. I think that it needs to be spelled out very clearly in the code that you cannot use residential parking at all as part of the shared parking plan. And you also cannot use the residential guest parking as part of the shared parking. And you cannot use ADA spaces as part of the shared parking. And I know Ms. Helen will draft that in five less words than I just used, but I just, you know, one of the things I think the commission can appreciate is that residential garages are typically locked and separate from the rest of the garages.
Yeah.
And for good reason. So the idea that you would allow somebody to share the parking is not going to happen. And then one of the big things that we've heard, again, all the way back to the start of the CAC, is the importance of having residential guest parking. And so, ADA stuff is ADA stuff, but I think that it's good to call that out. And I'll leave the rest of it because I know that it's important to have Commissioner Walter a part of the rest
Thank
of the
you.
Discussion.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Any other quick comments? Otherwise, we'll give it back to staff in terms of follow-on. All right. Back to you, Mr. King.
Okay. So tonight, since we're skipping over Attachment 1, we'd like to direct you to Attachment 2 that starts on page 77. If you recall, in the public hearing draft of the land use code, we had a new definition for something called active uses that was meant to replace the historic definitions of retail or pedestrian-oriented frontage. And we took the approach of trying to write something up that had some built-in flexibility to it, but we got feedback from both the stakeholders as well as the Planning Commission to take a second crack at it with a bit more specifics attached to it. So on page 77, you'll see that we have a bit longer proposed definition, but much more example-laden. So we essentially went through the land use charts and identified everything in the cultural, entertainment, and recreation section that's a permitted or conditional or administrative conditional as an active use, most all of the wholesale retail uses, just with a couple exceptions, and then a series of the service uses. So we've essentially went through the use charts that, as Commissioner Lang pointed out, it's a tedious but fulfilling exercise if done correctly, and identified everything so that somebody could look through those, see that that's an active use, and there's no debate about what an active use is. It is important to note that it still would need to meet the design criteria that are included in the code. So just because it is one of those uses, it still needs to be done the right way as far as design work goes on it. And we've also, on page 78, included an administrative departure section there that an applicant would be able to work with staff and propose something that didn't happen to be one of the things that we identified through our work, that through their proof they could have it qualify. So I think we've gotten some the people tracking this in the stakeholder community have given positive feedback. I think it's a small number of people who have been tracking this closely, but they did at least generally support this recommendation. But we would be interested in the commissioners just concurring on this so we can either do more modifications or check it off the list and include it in your consolidated code draft.
Well, do you want to? I was going to refer to a comment you had made, and I think kind of, you know, the spirit of what we want to do is to be crystal clear on what's allowed and not allowed. And so, you know, I want the developer to know this is allowed, this is not, very, you know, no question. How much gray area are we leaving here for interpretation, or that an active use in the future could be proposed? And it sounds like an active use, it looks like an active use, but someone determines it's not an active use?
Right now, what is considered an active use is crystal clear because it's in the land use charts, and each one is a separate line item, so there's no debate about what would be considered. And there's also flexibility to have something that's not considered be added to it. So the only really debate for things that already are defined as active uses is making sure they get kind of constructed and operated the correct way to function as an active use would be my clarification.
Not what you're going to ask.
So I had commented earlier just in passing that I thought this was – I really like this. I appreciated the comments by my mentor over here. No, by about, you know, maybe carving out the stuff on the services uses a little bit more finely, because that's actually been one of the big issues with the pedestrian-oriented frontage over the years. And so I really appreciate seeing that. And when it comes to the third thing, going to Commissioner Hillhorst's question about like the gray area. The only question I would have is, you know, we had this discussion about sort of, you know, the use tables don't have every conceivable use, and there is sort of an administrative interpretation provision that allows the director to kind of look like you say, well, I don't, this is like a different type of retail or whatever it is. Is it permitted? Is it conditional use? Does it, or is it prohibited? And I'm just wondering if this, this administrative departure process here is more flexible, less flexible, or if it's intended to be the same thing, maybe just use that same reference here saying for a use not listed above, you would refer to the same table. And the only reason I point that out is because if you say the use is within a building, that's, I think it would have to be by definition. So what we're really saying is the criteria is it supports pedestrian activity. All right. I can make an argument about a lot of things. The next one is it promotes a high degree of visual and physical interaction between the building interior and the adjacent public realm. This, to me, goes to Mr. King's point there about design criteria for, like, pedestrian-oriented furniture. This is really a glazing, you know, like, how big are your windows and, you know, these types of things. And so I think, you know, if I'm an applicant, I just say, well, I'm meeting your pedestrian-oriented frontage glazing standards. You know, I've got these massive, you know, floor-to-ceiling windows and da-da-da and this. And so, and then it says use meets the design criteria and FAR exemption for ground level and upper level uses. And I'm not sure without going and reading that, that that doesn't ultimately become, include or encompass or overlap subsection two there. In other words, I don't know if the design criteria, I haven't read them, but I don't know if the design criteria don't already require that you promote a high degree of visual and physical interaction. You see what I'm saying?
They provide more specificity right. with regard to the type of street frontage.
Yeah.
But okay. I think what to your initial point about how this interrelates with the use chart provisions, essentially the interpretation requirements for the director to identify where your use fits in the chart still apply. So long as essentially the director slots them in a chart, in a line. So we've identified essentially where then they're automatically a de facto active use. So we would go through that same process okay. and they would sync together.
All right.
If the director determines on a use that's ambiguous, that it's not on a line that's an active use, you have the departure opportunity to put that into a section that by its design meets the active use requirements.
Good. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Just if I could, a quick follow-on. So I'm by no means a domain expert, unlike my colleague Commissioner Lang here. But to me, this feels like the exception or the admin departure is a big enough door, whether by design or not, that you could basically push more or less anything you wanted to. And
if you design it properly, there are many things that
exactly.
can meet those requirements.
Exactly. That was my comment about whether we do it by design or you know not.
Maybe not recycle centers.
Possibly. Possibly.
But there are some things.
That's right. But I think clarity there would be a good thing. So we are at 10 o'clock, almost on schedule. I know we have one more topic. Mr. King, do you know how much time we anticipate that you think we would need or should we?
I am going to suggest that topic, because it does relate to floor plates
yes.
as well as a couple of comment letters that were mm-hmm. fairly detailed and related directly to this, that if it's okay, we reprint this in the May 3rd agenda packet, and it can be brought up on that evening.
I would certainly concur. I think where we are in terms of the long public comment session this evening, mm-hmm. we may be at a point of diminishing returns. So I would certainly concur. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Okay. I'd just like to remind the commission and the public that's watching that we have a timeline for this. This will conclude our meeting number 3, and we'll have the packet going out likely late Thursday or Friday of this week, just based on the turnaround it takes us for next week's meeting. And then, as I stated, please earmark the May 10th as the date when the consolidated code package
Thank
will
you.
Go out. So that's the full 140 pages with all of your direction to date, so that you can work towards your May 24th date. And it's my understanding that Downtown Livability, Terry's given us top billing at those 3 meetings. So we'll have most all of those meetings for Downtown Livability.
Thank you very much.
John?
Yes, Commissioner Lawrence.
May I also ask staff to add to that table that I requested the FAR? Because I think we need to look at all of it in context, because it's all relative. What is the FAR they're able to achieve within that building? Because I think that's very important.
Thank you.
It's not just the floor plate by itself.
Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Cullen, over to you.
Yes, Chair Davidos. I just wanted to acknowledge that we have in the audience Leanne Bremer, and she's sitting in place for Elaine Spencer, who is an attorney, and their law firm has been retained by the city attorney's office to provide independent and outside counsel review of the downtown code amendment, and they're looking at it for various issues. So they're here, they've been observing, and I just want to recognize that Leanne has been in the audience all night. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you. So I think it's over to back to you, Mr. Cullen, for the
yes,
minutes, I believe,
and,
yeah?
I do recall that at the last meeting that the chair promised that we would be going through some minutes tonight.
I did, yes.
Yes. And I know you knew I wasn't going to forget that.
Yes.
And I have to ask you that we really do need to do it, because we've got March 1st, 8th, and 22nd that need to get approved and or modified and approved, so that we can get them signed and up on the website. Because that includes the public hearing for the downtown livability. And I have noted that Commissioner Walter last week had mentioned that remove any references to her in March 1st because she was not there.
That's right.
But somehow or another, she managed to show up in the minutes.
Powerful, powerful
yes,
presence.
It's quite the influence.
So should we just quickly go through the March 1st? Any comments?
It is. Motion to approve the March 1st, 2017 minutes.
Do we have a second?
It was captured accurately.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right. We move to the March 8th minutes.
I'd like to abstain from voting on that one since I was not present.
Do we have a motion to approve the minutes of March 8th?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. We move to the minutes of March 22nd.
I move that we approve the March 22nd, 2017 minutes.
Do we have a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
So thank we you.
Approve
that
the
was
minutes.
Relatively painless.
Back to
I
you.
I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Well, we can't let him break promises. I mean,
no. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you for holding him accountable.
So moving on to public comment, I do want to thank folks who've been patiently waiting for the concluding public comment. If you've signed up, please, I think that was the... I don't know how many folks are still, but let me just quickly...
Jack's running to the front.
Come on in. I have just Jack McCullough, 701 Fifth Avenue, Suite 6600, Seattle 98104. I was going to talk about parking, and I will only briefly, since we've pushed that over. But I'd like to talk about height for a second, too. The parking piece is, we endorse the idea of sort of moving it off, deferring until you actually have an opportunity to look at the parking study. I think you'll discover that this 20% mixed-use discount is not a loophole, actually, in large projects. But I can imagine situations in small projects where you have, where a restaurant or retail use makes up a third of the building, perhaps, where, you know, a three-story building, where it could lead to issues. But, you know, I think about the Braeburn. We did the Braeburn, and, you know, we used these discounts that were available. These large projects have such an enormous reservoir of parking. I mean, the Braeburn's so overparked now. I mean, there's so much available parking. So I think you've really got to distinguish these big projects with mixed uses and dynamic different needs from, but the parking study will do that, I think. So I wouldn't necessarily say it's a loophole in all cases. Thank you. That's good to know. Thank
yeah,
you.
And then on the, Commissioner Morso raises an excellent point about FAR and height. So I just a couple things for you to think about, maybe from a market point of view. First of all, we need to distinguish between office floor plates and residential floor plates, right? Because the code already makes your residential floor plates only half the size of your office floor plates, effectively, right? So I guess my pitch would be, I think your comments are well taken in the context of office floor plates and a 24,000-square-foot mass rising into the sky. But if at a 12,000-square-foot residential tower, you already have something that's really, I think, as slender as you want it to be in order to be able to provide housing that's efficient and, you know, maybe semi-affordable. The second, so I think I would suggest you might want to limit your comments as you consider it to the office floor plates, and particularly that 450 to 600, because that's the iconic, that's through the glass ceiling downtown, right? The idea was to penetrate that 450-foot height and have some towers that would stand out, and what do you want those to be? From an FAR point of view, you're going to run out of FAR on these sites before you ever get to 600 feet, frankly. I mean, I've only known of one project in my experience, and that was, we considered, where Plus Investments is doing the kind of four residential towers potentially. You could do a 600-foot residential tower there. But then again, you're at 12,000 feet. You're not at 24. So I think you get what you're looking for. Most of these projects that ever rise to that height in 01 are going to be residential. But you want to make sure that if you have an office project come up that you deal with that point. Just for reference, your usable plates, office plates, in Bellevue they tend to be 24 because that's what's available on these large blocks. In Seattle they tend to be about 20. The blocks are smaller in the market, but the market expects you to deliver 20,000 feet. You think of the tallest, and I'll finish right now, building downtown in Seattle that's maybe, the most iconic of the skyline, that's Columbia Center, right? And it stands out. Those top plates are only about 14,000 or 15,000 square feet. Very interesting, but they do, you can see that building kind of come in as it goes up. So we're happy to work with staff and provide any other information, but we'd suggest maybe it's an office, not a residential issue. And I guess the final thing is you told us to go back last week and settle the height on the Fortress site with the staff, and we have done that. We're all good. We will come back and talk to you next week. Everything's fine. We've worked the footnote. We think we've responded to your issue with a little tweaking. So thank you for the good counsel.
Thank you for closing it. Appreciate it.
Yes,
thank you. If there's anybody else who would like to use the public comment, please.
Pamela Johnson, 3741 122nd Avenue Northeast. One of the things that I wanted to point out is the Braverman specifically is a odd example of any example of parking, because the Braverman does not do its business with retail people that come in the door. They do a lot of their business from overseas, and because of the high end that they are. So it's a very weird scenario compared to most retail scenarios. The other thing that I wanted to point out was in the earlier section with the Bellevue Technology Center, I didn't hear Mr. Matt say the whole part of the policy, which is SCR 66, which states office as a conditional use is appropriate for the property of 156 Avenue Northeast between Northrop and North 24th Street, commonly known as Utigrad. And it has discussion area should be developed under conditional use permit with regard to the stand of trees, large stand of trees, views through the site from adjacent sites, and the office open character of the site. So I didn't hear him talk about the views and about the open character of the site, which is something that's already in the comp plan. So I just wanted you guys to know that. Thank you.
Good call. Thank you. Thank you. Last call. Yes. Come on over.
First, I want to thank Neil and Carol and Dan Stroh, he was here, but they took some time to come down to the BDA. We want to thank them for that. And then they were also willing to take up some issues that are a little bit smaller. Tim Jackson, PMF Investments, 15015 Main Street, Suite 203, Bellevue, Washington. Sorry.
Thank you.
That's a fine print.
Of course. So I don't want to take up a lot of time. We're at the end of the meeting, and it's been a long night. But I just want to talk about a couple things. Just really quickly, we're looking at design standards along 405. Staff was considerate enough to
think about how parking and all that will happen down in that area of town, because we do have some water table issues and some real topo challenges. What we're looking for is a very nice modulated green wall attempt to screen some of those buildings as you come through 405. So that's what the letter's referencing there. We're also proposing that, you know, it's kind of hard with a green wall because you plant the plants and who knows what's actually going to happen with them. So we're proposing to bond that, and we're asking that staff to come and inspect these things after 3 years and take a look at it. And then if it hasn't performed in the way that we dictated in design, that, you know, there's a bond there that they could act on and then, you know, enhance it as they feel that we came up short. So that's one issue. And then the only other issue that we wanted to talk about are just basically the build-to line, which staff has generously worked with us on, in kind of giving two different scenarios there, and that's in the letter. And then the last issue was just in phased projects, kind of like the Sheridan, we'd like the opportunity to be able to build the amenities we go along, which staff is also working on some language there and are working on. But obviously, we don't want to set up a situation where somebody could build three-quarters of their project and never done anything amenity-wise. It's just kind of as you go, being able to do the amenity spaces around those particular buildings, which is the plan for the Sheridan site. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Any other public comment? Yes, we have one more. Yes, sir.
Good evening, everyone. Alex Smith, 700 112th LLC in Bellevue. I just wanted to bring up the subject of the base height as it relates to the amenity incentive system, if it will should survive. So as we agreed that, or I shouldn't say we agreed, but as you determined that the FAR should be related to the 90% of the new max, we're pointing out that we should have the same attitude as it relates to the base height in terms of 90% of the new maximum height. This draft that was in your packet addresses that as well as FAR exemption for TOD. It was authored by our land use attorney, Larry Martin. We've mentioned this in the past, but just wish to reiterate it. Correct me if I'm wrong. We haven't heard about this subject this evening. I know that we've addressed it with staff recently, and will it be brought up at the next meeting or the meeting after that? And just wish to point this out as part of your packet this evening. I know it's quite thick. And for the benefit of the representative from Miller Nash, this also coincides with the same argument that this is a arbitrary action that is legally invalid because it's not based on the impacts of development. It is an illegal tax on development that is illegal because it violates RCW 8202.020. So just wanted to bring that up once more. It seems like it might be timely, and I won't take the time to discuss the FAR exemption for TOD. It's unrelated to the legality or the legal jeopardy, as I say. So, cheers. Thank you again for your service, and hope to buy you all a drink soon.
Thank you. And thank you for the reminder. I'm sure, you know, we will certainly follow up on that one. I think it's a good one, too. Thanks. Last call, public comment. If not, we will. I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just make a funny comment.
Sure.
So Ms. Bremer is a well-known land use attorney, and she actually is the one who litigated successfully to the state Supreme Court one of the key challenges set under RCW 8202.020, setting precedent favorable for developers and property owners. So Mr. Smith should rest well tonight on that.
On that note, do we have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Oh. Good job. Thank you. Have a good evening.